Tonight, the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey, rides sidecar. Then later, we'll check in with comedian Nate Weatherup and get a sports preview from Mark Carman. And finally, Adam Selzer stops by the Showcase studio just before the cast of 1776. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Tuesday. Hello. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm Patty Vasquez, joined by the AV Club's John Tatey, who looks just I would say stunning. Can a man be called stunning and not
yes, he can.
Have it not be weird?
I don't find anything stunning. Weird about it at all.
You've often been complimented by people at the station for being very well dressed. Dapper is another word people would use.
That's a word I get a lot.
Dapper? You don't like dapper?
I'd like stunning. I'm kind of tired of dapper because
okay.
I feel like people.
They
use it.
No, it was from other people.
But I feel like people sometimes say it with a trace of irony.
Oh no! Yeah, a little cynical. Okay.
It's just not a word that comes up in stunning. Though.
Right, but they say it's
I've never gotten stunning.
Stunning.
I will take
This combination. Well, I'm a big fan of purple as well. Just so you know.
Yeah, we've got touches of purple in this jacket. I love a plaid jacket. So we've got some pinks, we've got some navy blues, there's a little gold in there.
And the thing is, the purple pulls in the pinks and the navy blue.
Right,
it all ties together.
Yeah.
Yes, purple tie. WGNradio.com, so you can absorb and indulge in the stunningness that is John Tatey. Please go to WGNradio.com and you can watch us on the live stream. Esmeralda, he was wondering whether or not there was a color alteration on our screens, or perhaps that was your stunning red hair. Can I say stunning?
No,
dazzling.
Hair.
I'm gonna go dazzling for her. I apologize.
Thanks.
It's both. I love
it. Well, thank you.
It looks very cool. How has it been handling? I know that you were telling me there was some concern about how long it would take you to, rinse, let's say.
One of my robes is red. One of my towels is red. I've put T-shirts on my pillows that are all red now.
Mm-hmm.
I have my jean jacket is red.
Oh, no. And does that sit
on the collar? I tried to wash it today, but it didn't work, and I'm too lazy to try harder.
You now have you have a red collared jean jacket.
I do. And it's like a pinkish, so I'm sure it'll go away, the longer I use it and every time I wash it. And I actually, when I rinse the hair out, it wasn't so bad. I was expecting just red everywhere.
You'll have to pardon my naivete, but is this a problem that always happens when you do hair coloring?
I think it's more the brighter colors, the blues, purples, reds. I don't know about people who just dye it brown or blonde, if that really happens.
Yeah,
but with the red, I know with the crazy colors.
It is a striking red. Man.
Thank you.
It's very nice. I've never dyed my hair. I mean, I tried a mahogany, like a Walgreens store purchase and done that. I think there was some, but because she had it professionally done, and I think the level to which it is a brilliant color as well as intense, so it's going to last a long time. She had that. It's gonna have some residual effect. But there are things that women do to their hair that you can't do this, you can't do that. Like when I have keratin done to my hair, I can't put a ponytail in for like 24 hours or 2 days. Otherwise, that will then be a permanent bend in my hair.
It'll stay that way.
Yes.
And why do you put the keratin in?
I know. It's a good question, considering how often I braid my hair. When I blow dry it, it goes very straight. It's a smooth. I have a very frizzy and curly hair.
I see. So it's to prevent split ends? Is that what
this
is?
No, to make it easier to style.
I see.
Yeah. No, split ends. I don't know if it does the split ends or not. These are things I'm not really. I just, my hairdresser
says. Well, you know more than I do. I never put product in my hair. I have never done anything to my hair, which I think is why it has remained at least as much as it has.
Right.
Because there's definitely baldness in my heritage. So I've always really babied it.
Right. Well, do you think that they did something to their hair that attributed to their or contributed to their baldness?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just genetic. But I'm trying to be as nice to my hair as possible. So hopefully the genes will give me a break.
There is a study that says that peppermint oil also enhances growth or prevents lossage. Just so you know.
Really?
Yes.
There's a study to that effect.
The study recently just came out this week. And I was curious because there's, the hair growth also is because, cells die or the follicles don't recreate hair anymore. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if that would also affect grayness, whether or not it would prohibit gray hair, encourage the color to continue because pigmentation is also altered by cell death.
You know, I'm getting gray, and I wonder if this is how it goes for all men, but since we had the baby, I'm sure this is just a coincidence, or not, perhaps, but I have a lot of gray in my beard when I let it grow out.
Really? Yeah. Well, gray in the beard seems to happen first.
My question. That happens first.
Yes. My husband, although he was gray a little bit early, but his beard would be full on, and red. He has no red hair on his head, but would have a lot of red in his beard.
Really?
Yes. Which I thought was very
sweet. Well, we've learned all about hair.
Yes, we have. Any other questions about hair? 312 or comments. Maybe what are your thoughts and experiences?
What are your hair issues?
What do you do to prevent or encourage hair growth or loss? That's the thing. I mean, I think people have all their solutions is like I massage my scalp.
Do you really?
I have very few. My first gray hair was when I was 18 years old and I was at U of I and it was on this side of my head. And I pulled it, and for the longest time, that was the only gray hair I had from college until 2001 when my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer. I got another one. I had two. And people would point it out, and I just go yank it. And because I have dark hair, too, so when you have one, it sticks out. But now I probably have to about, oddly enough, just about six. I don't color my hair.
Wow, you keep close track, though.
I do. You notice these
things. Do you tape them into a scrapbook? And
I've thought about it. Yeah. I've thought about it. And then I'm like, are the roots still? And a part of my hair is going a little bit red. So I think that is the pigmentation starting to go. And the next step will be gray hair. So
I went to my first haircut that I got in Chicago. I went on a Yelp recommendation. Everybody said, oh, this guy is so nice. And I go in and I show him a photo of the style I want, right? And it's from like a year ago. And he
of your own hair,
of myself.
So not like a model.
No, make it look like this. This is how I like it. You see, I haven't changed my haircut in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, oh, you had a lot more hair then. This was a year old.
What?
And that's the first thing he says to me.
That's the hardest thing is the picture, isn't it? Esmeralda, I did the same thing recently. You know, remember that opening of Concord? Well, remember. You know when we went to Concord 55's opening?
Yes.
And so people kept commenting on the pictures I took. Your hair looks great, but the bangs were so long that I couldn't quite see. So I took that selfie a few days, just days, John. Just days later and said, I just need a little bit off and I want to maintain the way this looks. Nope. That's not, too short, and like she layered it and all kinds of all hell broke
loose. She messed it up.
Yeah,
you know you can do it yourself,
and I have, but I refrain because then she guilts me when I do that.
It sounds like
what?
Does somebody have TB up there? Because every time she turns the mic on,
leave your mic
coughing.
Open. Leave your mic open for a second. Is that who's talking? Who do you?
Oh,
who's?
Wow. Oh, I have the door open.
I know, but tell us who's there. Is that Jim? Who's in the hallway? No, open it. Open.
No, it's just Rob. No, it's just I leave the door because it's so warm
in here. Wait, is that Rob and Adam talking? Leave it open. Leave it open. Hold on.
Okay.
Open the mic. We want to hear what's... Yeah. This is great. This is like when someone butt dials you and you're listening to the conversation. Open your mic, Esmeralda. Don't make me open it for you.
They didn't... I don't think... You can't even do that. Can you?
I don't know. Craig, can we open her mic for her? Do we have any way to... I don't think we have any control down here. Oh, can we open the engine?
I feel so powerless.
Wait, hold on. There's no way to open the engineer. That's the loudest I've ever heard.
The background. I know.
I feel like eavesdropping on
them. I was trying to pay attention to Esmeralda, but I was also listening to the...
She's protecting them. I believe they're talking politics. Oh, well, fine. We don't get to do it till tomorrow. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by the AV Club's John Tatey. All right, on from follicle, on to other things.
Oh, we're moving on from follicles.
I don't know. We could, unless somebody wants to call.
I don't think I have anything more to say.
Yeah,
about
I think we're
hair.
Done. I think we're good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Quick. Well, not quickly, but let's start because who knows how long this conversation. I rely very strongly on your recommendations because I loved Fargo season 2 so very, very much. And granted, it's not easy when the only time I can watch things is, generally after this show. So like around 2:30 in the morning. So it's got to really catch me. And I have watched Fargo season 2 mm-hmm. after a show one night. True Detective I got into after a show one night.
Season 1 or 2?
Season 1 for sure.
Okay. Now I love season 2 of True Detective, which I believe has been unfairly maligned.
I think it's fine. I think that for me, I you have to be able to separate. I'm not as good at compartmentalizing shows, right? So Fargo 2, much better than Fargo 1 seasons, I think. And yes, I think season 1 of True Detective is much better than season 2.
See, to me, in both cases, Fargo, I think, I agree. Season 2 was a touch more compelling than Season 1, but they both, to me, are like precious jewels.
Yes.
And True Detective is a situation.
You can separate them as their own entities.
Well, it's an anthology series, right?
So they should be separate. It's like short stories. You can't like get mad at a writer whose other story is completely different from this one. So those of us who aren't able to separate those ideas struggle in moments like this.
It sounds like you're able to separate them just fine, though.
I know, but that's I'm trying to be wise about it. But really, in an emotional level, I didn't like season 2.
Well, what you're teeing me up for is that last week I recommended *Halt and Catch Fire* to the listeners because I very much enjoyed, and to you, and because I very much enjoyed the first two seasons of the show. But I'm disappointed in the third season so far. Now, I have not watched tonight's episode. There was another episode on tonight. But I think that the show, it was on the bubble. The ratings were not good for the second season.
Now,
and it was on the bubble for AMC. And I feel that the budget has been cut back.
Oh, okay.
And I think that the writing has suffered. My problem with the writing so far this season is that everybody says exactly what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And A, this is not how actual human beings communicate. And B, it's not
how... You work against
how,
it. Constantly.
Right. And
that's
it's
acting,
not,
actually, is going against your instincts.
It's... Well, I think that good writing is doing more than one thing at a time. And it's, you know, it's, yes, trying to accomplish the character's motives, but also giving you some subtextual insight into the person's psyche.
And it's supposed to be show, don't tell. So if they're saying everything they're thinking,
exactly,
that becomes boring.
That's the, yes, exactly. And that's a problem I have with a lot of the writing. I'm kind of baffled, I have to be honest, by our critic who likes this new season very much so far on the AV Club. And Dennis Perkins is our critic who's on it. And he does a wonderful job with his reviews. Is it Dennis Perkins or Dennis DeClaudio? Well, his name is Dennis.
We don't need to keep track.
Which Dennis
Go
it
to
is.
The AV Club
I'm
and
sorry,
you'll find
Dennis.
It. Sorry, Dennis. Both Dennises.
And I think that the show went out to California this season, and yet so much of the action has taken place in this nondescript warehouse setting where the central company...
Probably a Seattle-type situation.
It's a Seattle-type situation.
I'm just saying, sort of the idea of like a West Coast, but not quite California.
Well, but they're in California. They're in Silicon Valley.
No, they are, but were they in the first season?
In the first season, they were in the Silicon Prairie in Texas.
Oh, Prairie, okay.
There were some nice locations in the first two seasons. I think that the location budget has been cut. I think that's why they're shooting so much sort of dank warehouse instead of showing us California. If you're going to go to California, show us some California.
Right. Give me a palm tree.
Give me a palm
Give
tree.
Give me an ocean.
And now this is getting into maybe more nitpicky stuff, but there's a lot of camera motion this season. And I feel that some shows, especially Showtime shows I found, use a lot of camera motion to mask the cheapness of sets. And I think that Halt and Catch Fire is doing all this swoopy camera motion to mask the fact that the production design is maybe not as strong. But they're not so much composing shots as they are making the camera move around to give you the feeling of cinematography without actually having to do the hard work of composing beautiful shots.
So the writing for you and then the techniques they're using to sort of mask what's going on, perhaps budget-wise, are ruining.
Yes.
Do you think that Dennis, whichever one is doing the reviews, is it the for
Dennis.
Him, is it coming down to the performances, the characters? Because sometimes that is enough for people to hang in there regardless of the rest of it.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. Look, I'm not the only, or I'm one of the few in the critical community that I've talked to that liked the first two seasons and does not care for this one so far. But I do think people get attached to the characters and then they're watching it on that level. And I think that maybe I'm just watching the show. And I do. There's two of the characters who I like very much. And I'm still enjoying them because I think that the actors are pulling off some pretty mediocre scripts. They're bringing them to life. And I'm talking about Lee Pace and Mackenzie Davis are the two actors I'm talking about here. But I do think people just start to watch for the... And there's nothing wrong with this, let me add. I'm not poo-pooing it, but I think that Dennis is probably attached to these characters and just likes to seeing what's happening to them, which there's some interesting stuff happening to them. It's just that they're expressing their reactions to it in the most banal, sort of straightforward way. I don't find that a ton of fun to watch. So I'm kind of undoing... I'm sorry, listeners. I'm kind of undoing my recommendation of Halt and Catch Fire, but after that...
Wouldn't you say after season... I mean, I was not... drawn to the pilot.
You tried it out.
I tried out three episodes, and I would say, like, with diminishing results each time.
Yeah.
The first one, I mean, the first one, you know, got me enough to go, okay, let's see what the next one is like. And but you know what? It's funny is that I also am trying to watch. I'm trying to get through the second season of Bloodlines, which is a Netflix series, and I love the same thing. I love all the actors. I like the characters. I just am not. It's not. I'm not in it. I don't know what it is. I did watch, and this was kind of our sort of wrapping it into our conversation is Stranger Things, because Halt and Catch Fire also from during
right.
the 80s
right.
and a part of history that we're kind of familiar with, but this is going in a different way. Stranger Things, I think part of what was so intriguing about it for me when I first started watching it was how familiar it felt, you know, wood paneling walls in the basement
yes.
and all the references to pop culture, even the clothes the kids were wearing, the phones. For me, that was that got me into the story, I think.
Well, Stranger Things really, and this is a Netflix original if you haven't seen it, it's kind of a Goonies type
yes.
Adventure. TV series, I'm
yes.
trying to say.
Oh, adventure, gotcha.
Adventure.
Yes. Serial.
With sci-fi elements, sci-fi mm-hmm. and horror elements. I'm enjoying it very much. And I think that the show steeps itself in the period in a way that Halt and Catch Fire is not doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
In season 3 of Halt and Catch Fire, which, by the way, is on AMC, it's a show about the 80s PC revolution. And I think that the 80s in that show right now is kind of a gimmick. Like, there's a ton
yes.
of references and totally accurate references to the period, but it doesn't suffuse the plot in the way that on Stranger Things, you've got the kids running around in the woods and biking around the town on their own. And
in a way we did.
Yes, that
yeah.
I certainly did.
Yeah.
But in a way that kids maybe don't as much today, which I think is unfortunate, but that's the case.
Although it makes it very scary.
It makes it super scary.
It's like, good thing they don't go riding their bikes in the woods anymore. Down roads, dark, windy roads in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, that narrative of young adult independence is something that makes sense in an 80s context
yes.
and not as much in maybe a 2016 context. And Stranger Things uses that to fantastic effect, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. And that's what's wonderful about it. And we can talk about it as you go on through the series, because I have my thoughts on that, too. But
I've got two episodes left. I can't
oh,
wait to
really?
Finish it up. Yeah.
And I, by the way, I'm a big fan of Matthew Modine's, so it was fun for me to see him.
And he is creepy
so bad,
in this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Super creepy. And Winona Ryder, a lot of people, some people hate on her, and others completely adore her in this
role. I know.
Role.
She does inspire those polarized reactions,
yes,
doesn't she? I think she's excellent in this.
I'm fine down the middle. I, you know.
Oh, you're just fine with her.
Yeah. I'm going to go right down the middle and go, that's nice. I like seeing Winona Ryder. She neither repels me nor draws me and makes me adore her. It's fine.
Oh,
it's good to see her. What?
How politic of you, Patty.
I'm just saying. And yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's good to see a Winona Ryder. A little Heather.
Yes,
Zach.
I agree. It's good to see her,
especially because she. You know what's funny is that she was so iconic at the end of the '80s with a movie like Heather's and Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
That was probably early '90s, more so. 10 years past what this
yes,
movie.
I think
kind
I would say
embodies.
Early '90s. That's
yeah.
right. But very savvy casting there, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, I think so.
Both her and Matthew Modine, and then mostly unknowns mm-hmm. as the rest of the cast.
Well, because that role you would typically like think that they're going to cast like a Juliette Lewis often plays, that sort of
yes.
like wired out, stressed, and you know, overly skinny and haggard, I think.
Yeah.
Although Juliette Lewis has been playing that since she was 15 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
You know, that creepy white trashy, I guess.
White trashy, I think.
Yeah.
If speaking of being in politics, I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, but
yeah,
I think
that's
I
right.
think when they write that into the script, they say white trash. I mean, that's going to be in the description.
It's in the casting notice for
it
sure.
It is. Please, if I can have ethnically ambiguous as a you know casting call for me, I,
yeah.
I get to say white trash.
I think so.
Or
I'll allow it.
Harkens to Hispanic, I think is all.
Harkens to.
Harkens
oh,
to
how
Hispanic.
Nice.
Yeah, that's I think.
I've
that's
never harkened
nice.
To an
yeah,
ethnicity before.
I hearken to Hispanic.
Wow, good for you.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio and. John Tatey was listening to the news and had a question about whether or not I will say that for much longer.
I'm shocked by the news about Tribune Tower, just because, I mean, I've spent so much time shortly after I came here to Chicago. I started coming on this show. And so, like, this tower has been like a North Star for me. It's like my main landmark of Chicago. And I kind of orient everything else around Tribune Tower.
Which is accurate. I think that makes sense. Yeah. Everything emanates from here, as far as I know.
So I'm shocked that it was sold to somebody in L.A.
I know.
It doesn't seem right to me.
Well, I believe...
I don't mean to question your corporate overlords, but it doesn't seem right to me.
Right, but I mean, and it's going to be more so, I think, for the people who work in and have worked in this building for a long time,
yeah.
Where the Tribune newspaper has, you know, been the core of Chicago reporting for decades, and we've broadcast from the Allstate Showcase studio. I don't know what happens. I know that they have said that the newspaper is moving. If you read any of the reports and what they've said, they haven't necessarily said anything about WGN Radio. That has not been mentioned.
The newspaper is definitely moving, though. Huh?
That's, I believe, it's what has been in the news, is that they are moving.
There was actually an announcement internally that we will be here till June of 2018. We have a lease through June of 2018, and then after that, we may negotiate with the current owners to extend our stay.
So you have another 2 years.
Okay, so I won't panic.
Oh my God, your shoulders dropped 2 inches. Just from the relief of it. I like that. Oh,
did they?
I didn't realize that. You know how emotionally invested you were. That's good news. Well, I'm happier for you than I am for us.
Well, I've had so much fun here in the Showcase studio, and I love watching the people go by.
I agree.
It's just such a nice place to come, especially on a summer night like this.
Well, everyone has 2 years till June of 2018 to come by and wave at us in the Allstate Showcase studio. And if we negotiate and are able to stay, then all things are wonderful.
Yeah, like this fellow with the shoulder bag should wave at us.
Right.
Hey there.
Hello, shoulder bag.
And he did.
Oh,
look at that.
Nice.
That's the power of broadcasting right there.
Only until midnight. After midnight, no one can hear you. He waved because
really?
He heard you. Yes.
They stopped broadcasting it out there after midnight?
Maybe with the new landlords, they'll let us broadcast past midnight. That might be something.
Maybe it's a legal thing or something.
It is the neighborhood. There are people that can hear us have complained about the noise, the volume. Because, you know, we're very raucous here. At midnight, things get crazy.
I'm surprised they can hear it. Because when you go, it's not that loud when you go out there.
I've been told that there, because there are residential properties on this block. And there's some sort of like almost a tunnel of audio that kind of like, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you've been in this, when you stand in one spot, you can hear like an echo chamber.
There's a spot in Grand Central Station in New York where there's an arched area, and you can stand at one corner of this like square arched area and speak into the corner.
Yes.
And the person in the other corner can hear you.
Exactly.
Even if you whisper, exactly.
Yes. I can't remember. It's like is it called like a whisper corner or something?
I think that's
say
what
it
it's
is.
Called.
And I think that I believe that we are a broadcasting hallway. That's what we are. Not necessarily a corner.
Less romantic.
We're not, you know, we're not whispering. But we're kind of a holler hallway. How's that?
Holler
hallway.
Hollerway. Yeah.
Hollerway. I kind of like that. So, yes. Then, yeah, that's fine. It's fun after midnight to just do sign language with people who are passing by on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah. Hey, did you do Zanies tonight?
Thank you very much. You saw me write my notes down that I wanted to make sure that I thanked everyone that came out to Zanies tonight. It was an interesting show because I kind of went off book a lot. Not that I don't have a book. Mm-hmm. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do tonight. And I would say that happens probably a lot of the time. A lot of the time I have a good idea of what I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of material. I have decades of material.
Sure.
But I also have a lot of stories that I have no shame to share anymore on stage in a live setting. But it was a birthday for a good friend of mine and someone who has been so kind to comedians. Robbie Gandy Davis celebrated her birthday at Zanies at my show. And she goes to shows all the time. But she has always been someone, when I see her in the audience, I feel as though I must bring something else that she hasn't seen from me.
Really? I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is a fellow comic?
She's been coming to Zanies comedy clubs for, I mean, Vernon Hills.
She's just a patron, not
she's
just.
She's a fan.
Yeah.
She is a fan. She and another woman named Donna are just so wonderful to comics. They have their favorites, but they aren't judgmental of people who are starting out, people who are working on new material, people who do the same material all the time. But for who I am and who I've gotten to know her as, I've always tried, when I see her, I try to make sure she sees something she's never seen before. And
it's a good challenge for yourself.
Well, and I should do it for every audience, but in particular for her, I feel, and it's weird. Like, she's like someone I feel safe doing all of that because she knows that it's all genuine. But there was a moment where I was explaining, and my audience will hate this, but I was explaining how people will use the C word to make a woman feel smaller, to diminish us. So, like, if I say this, there's nothing she can come back with. And whether that's the intention, it is often the result.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we're unnerved, we're angry, we're upset.
It's staggering.
It is. It's used to shock. And I think people think that I do that, whether it's with humor or the stories that I tell. But it's, you know, I come with a cumulative experience from everything that's happened my entire life, right? So what you get in this moment isn't necessarily whether what I planned. It's kind of a reaction of a lifetime. So so talking about someone calling me the C word, because it happened on Facebook, someone called me the C word and said they wished I would crawl into a hole and die in response to a conversation we were having about a candidate. And
okay.
So I was just saying that there isn't anything you can call a guy. You can call a guy his body part, and it's sort of this badge of honor, right? If you call him, I can actually say right now, I can say, John, sometimes you're kind of a dick, and that's fine, right? That's something you can say on, you can say that on prime time, and that's actually okay. And there isn't a body part of a woman, like, there's not. Everything else is disturbing. It's ugly. It's gross. It's icky. And maybe that word that I just said will make someone upset, but nowhere near to the level that it is with the female body part. So I was referring to the C word, and then somebody, and Issa and her father were in the audience, and they were talking a little bit, and I asked what was going on, and he wanted to know what word I was referring to. And that it's not the first time it's happened, because there was a presidential candidate who used a female body part during a debate. During a rally. Donald Trump, someone called, I want to say, I can't remember if it was Cruz or Rubio. They said he was a female genitalia.
Right.
And Donald Trump repeated it and said that I didn't say it. She did it. And he said it. And I
that's
a word.
That.
Right. Yeah. And I should be able to say that, because that actually was broadcast on the news. If I told you what it was, he said, it would just be sort of documenting it. But I don't even I like that word less than the C word. Right.
Really?
I guess the P
word.
The
five-letter word is the word you're talking about.
Yeah. And it happened to me before when I was telling that story, and someone they didn't know what word it was. So I in that instance, I went over and I whispered it in her ear, and she goes, "Oh, there's no big deal." Right. Like it wasn't that, but I couldn't do it in front of an audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's a great moment. You walking over to the audience must have loved that. Right?
But that's who I am. I'm like, there's no wall here. This is organic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's happening. So he wanted to know what the C word was. And I, instead of just blurting it out or walking over, now in the moment you have to decide, well, how do I bridge this? Because now the whole audience wants it. People were yelling, "I'm fine with the word," right? But not everybody is going to be fine with the word,
right?
But I explained what the reason that I have come to the point where I'm okay with that word, not okay, but I don't flinch when I hear it. It doesn't make me unhinged, is because when I was in college, I was at a bar at the University of Illinois, a place called O'Malley's, and there was another guard who grabbed my ass. I was a lifeguard at all the pools in Champaign, and this lifeguard grabbed my ass, and it was a crowded bar, and I went to go grab him. I didn't get him fast enough, but I didn't know what to do. I was so shocked. I mean, like, he just full on grabbed it and held on, and then got through the crowd. So the next day, when we were guarding together.
This is someone you work with.
Exactly.
Okay.
We were working together. We are on the deck of a Freer pool. People are lap swimming. And I confronted him about it. And I said, you know, that was whatever it was I said. I can't even remember what the words were. This is such a long time ago. And he called me a dykey C word. And I picked up a chair and I hit him with it. And you know, there are people swimming. I had a job to do. And I was shaking. I was so angry. And of course, you know, there was a letter to the Department of Recreation at Champaign, and it became a thing. And I thought, it's not okay. He did that, and he got the result he was looking for beyond that. I mean, even more
right?
So I sat down and made myself able to say that word. And I explained that to the audience I remember sitting down in my room in my townhouse on Elm Street near Green. And I literally sat down and meditated with the C word, like said it over and
desensitized
over.
Desensitized yourself.
Exactly. Just said it over. And so I told that story. And that's not something I've ever done before for a live audience. I've never told that story. Mm. I've never told this audience that story. But I just don't, I mean, and in the same way when we talk about, you know, African Americans or black people, and again, even then I don't know what I should say because some people mm-hmm. want to be called someone. And so I want to respect that, but also explain that I don't know. I'm still learning as I go. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to, in the same way we flinch at certain words when it comes to racial slurs or right. racial, when we conjure up a word that is intended to hurt. That's right. what it is. And the other thing there was one woman who did not like the show. I did come off the stage again because there were some things going on in the audience and I wanted to see what was going on. But there was a woman in the back who, and she was waiting for her mom, she said, because she did not like the language that we were in. And I get that. But when I came back to the stage, I told the rest of my story, did the rest of my act, and I explained, here's my goal every single night. And it may not be something that's for everybody every night, but I hope that I get to you. Every night my goal of doing this is for someone to feel like I'm not the only one. That's all whether it's stand-up comedy or doing this radio show. And it may not be specific to you, but it might be an element of like, oh, yeah, I've felt that way before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and so that was what the show was like tonight at Zany. So I want to thank everyone for being a part of that. It was a great audience. I've never, ever done a show like that. It may have been a little bit scattered and all over the place, and it wasn't what I didn't know what I was going to do. But you guys, but the audience made it authentic. They helped me be authentic, and that's, you can't always have an audience that will trust you and go with you on everything.
Now, what about this one person complaining about the language? I don't understand.
She didn't complain. The thing is that her daughter told me, but on her way out, that woman would not talk to me. I tried to say thank you for coming out tonight, and she wouldn't even make eye contact with me.
Oh, wow.
I know. That's it. But I can't. I can't spend 45 minutes to an hour or 3 hours a night hoping that every single person that hears the sound of my voice is going to connect or like it. And I know that there are people who are going to react angrily, sometimes violently or viciously. And I hope the best for you. And I hope that another moment comes along that is better.
You know, I forget who said this. I wish I could remember, but it's, I found it to be true. And I remind myself of it often, is that you can't do something that people love without also doing something that people hate. You can't inspire that passion without some people feeling quite the opposite mm-hmm. about it. So, you know, I say this often to the staff on the site when maybe they're feeling down about a response on Twitter or some such, you know, like, look, you can't, if nobody's reacting mm-hmm. that strongly to what you're doing, then you're probably just being dull. And I think that applies just as well to stand-up
comedy. Well, when someone gets angry about the sound of someone's voice or the things that they say, it's because it doesn't fit with what they want. And that's then there's nothing I can do about that.
Right.
You have to be open to the moment. So, I mean, you know, well, everyone just drop your shoulders 2 inches and see what happens
right.
next. But more after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by the AV Club's John Tatey, who writes a great segment. What do we call it? Segment?
Column
called Block and Tackle.
Talking about the Block and Tackle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming back soon with football season.
Yes, it is.
Underway.
And we have some preseason. The Bears are really just...
the 0-3 Bears.
The 0-3 Bears. And I want them to be called that. Rob Martier, Esmeralda, and we do a vote around the horn. Craig, I think that for the rest of the season, they should just be called the 0-3 Bears. No matter what their record is for the rest of the year, just the 0-3 Bears. I kind of love.
Well, tight end Zach Miller's got a real positive outlook. He's asking Chicago Bears fans to stick with us. We've got a winning team. He feels as though they'll be able to put something together.
Okay.
It's very optimistic.
I think
you should have.
It's just preseason. And look, the 2007 2007 New England Patriots went 0-4 in the preseason and then proceeded to win their next 16
regular season games. Was he talking about the Patriots?
Patriots. Yeah.
I was trying to inspire Bears fans through the Sterling example.
Mr. Ugg suspended for 4 games.
He wears Uggs?
He's a spokesperson for Uggs.
He's the spokesperson for Uggs. His only redeeming quality.
That's more deplorable than what'd you say? Sorry, Rob.
I said his only redeeming quality that he wears Uggs.
Really? They're very comfortable. Have you put on a pair of Uggs with no socks on?
No, I never have. I don't like the way they look.
Yeah, no, they're not pretty. Rob, you've felt them?
No, I've got a pair of Ugg boots and Ugg slippers. Or house shoes, as I like to call them.
They're quite.
Yes.
I recommend trying the house shoes. You have boots. You have the.
I've got the Ugg boots.
The big flat-footed thumping. What'd you say?
They're clunky, thumping. But they're fun.
Thumping. Yeah.
And they keep my, you know what? They keep my toes nice and warm, Patty.
Esmeralda, are you trying to imagine?
Do you wear them with leggings?
No, I wear them with my man Lululemons, of course.
Okay. Are they flared Lululemons?
Doesn't ever. Of course. You got to put them over the boot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of friction.
All I'm saying is that the preseason is too early for despair, no matter who your team is. And I understand there are other reasons to have a gloomy outlook, but let the season start at least. Carry your optimism through to the new season.
Here's the thing. Do you know Chicago yet? I mean, you know, carry your glue. I mean, like the clubs, right? Well, here's the thing. We can see when things we do, right? We bring our gloom and doom into the season. And when proven differently, then we rise to the occasion, which is what we did last year. And of course, this year, you know, buoyed by last year's success, we're all in. Oh, there's going to be no conversation about Colin Kaepernick.
That's all right. That's all right. We don't need to.
I know. I do kind of a bear down. Do you have a problem with him not standing up for the national anthem?
With Colin Kaepernick? Yeah. Are we squeezing it in the next 45 seconds?
Yeah.
I do not have a problem with it. I mean, I stand for the national anthem, and I do take some pride in it, but I...
Here's what I would say to people who are angry. Take your anger, donate to veterans, benefits, so any group that helps veterans, donate. I mean, take your anger and put it somewhere else. More after this on... What?
Can I do 20 seconds on Colin Kaepernick before we go? Here's my thing. Is we put these athletes out in front of the world, and then we get upset when they use their platform too often. And I think that that's what I admire most about Colin Kaepernick, whether you agree with him or not. And there are certain athletes on the other side that I've disagreed with on this particular issue, but I have to spread the admiration around that they're using their platform that they've been given. I think players should actually do that more often because they have a capability to start conversation. I think there's been a valuable conversation started around what patriotism is, why we play the anthem at the games, et cetera.
Use your anger and help someone. More after this on 720 WGN. John Tatey, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Will we see you next week?
You will. And I'm going to feel bad about this all week, Patty.
No.
You and I know what happened.
No. I said yes.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds weird.
I had to yammer on about Colin Kaepernick
a
little too long.
Will you go eat a fig for me?
It's got those wasp carcasses in there. I don't want that.
Bring me some sweet, sweet wasp carcasses.
Thank you, Patty. AVClub.com. And you do this part. I don't know why.
No, and at John Tatey on Twitter. That's T-E-T-I, John traditional spelling. Have a great night, and we will see you next week.
Okay,
safe
thanks,
travels.
Patty.
And you'll be back in the Showcase studio.
So, okay, good.
We'll see what happens in 2 years. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by comedian Nate Weatherup, who makes his way to Milwaukee this week to perform at the Comedy Cafe, starting on tomorrow night, Wednesday night through Saturday?
Thursday night.
I've heard it both ways. They're doing the Thursday now? That's one of the hot... That used to be... Is it still a hot room?
You know what? It's a new room. Oh. I haven't... They moved the club to a new place.
I don't know what you're saying to me. What's happening in my head? What happened? Where is it? Do you know where it is?
It's on Old World 3rd Street.
Interesting. In the building that they own, because there is that where the Comedy Condo is, do you know? Is it in the same
building? Well, I don't want to give that information.
Oh, yeah.
So if anyone wants to know where I'm sleeping this
above
weekend.
Above the club.
How did Nate die in Milwaukee?
You know what? I totally, my mind blanked. I was just having a regular casual conversation with a comic and forgot that I was on the air and people could hear us. So you haven't been to the new club yet?
Yeah, no, I haven't. It'll be my first time back in... I was supposed to be there last summer, and then my grandpa passed away and just ruined my plans.
Ah, man.
Their old club was one of my favorite places to work ever. I love that club. So,
do you think they chipped away that wall? Was that on canvas?
It was the mural wall?
Yeah, the mural wall with all the comics on it.
I hope so.
I would think so. It had.
Wouldn't it just be so sad if that just got painted over?
It has to be. Somebody had to have taken that.
You'd think
so. Now I need to know. Will you please find that out?
I will find that out.
With your investigative skills.
I will do that.
The Milwaukee
Comedy. Or my eyes.
That's investigating.
It is. That's fair.
So many great nights in that club. Greg Giraldo and I hung out for a week when I was opening for him at the cafe. And it was there was a moment where you're on your 12th shot of tequila and your throat says no more for you. Mm-hmm. And we've been drinking since about, I would say, 7 p.m. before the show started. It was now 4 in the morning. And I was like, no, I can't. This was too much. I was in my 20s and stupid.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was...
I'm in my 30s and I did 2 shows with Kevin Bozeman this week and the same thing
happened. Oh, he will break your liver.
Every time.
He's got to be so angry right now.
Every time.
Yeah, he doesn't play.
And every time you go, all right, I know what's about to happen. I'm an adult. I can just say no. And then you go, all right.
But he's a big dude.
I know.
You're a little dude. And littler even now.
I am. Yeah.
You're
yes,
littler.
I am.
By about, what, 45 pounds?
Yeah, 25%.
What?
Yeah.
Amazing. And now you've had Jet's Pizza at least three times. First of all, I don't know Jet's Pizza. What's happening?
Well, you're welcome in advance for introducing you to it. It's a Detroit chain that branched out to Chicago a couple years ago. They do Sicilian-style deep dish, so not the Chicago deep dish. It's like this thick, fluffy crust, and it has the caramelized cheese around the edge of it. It is just, you know, is one open? Because we need
Jet's
to get
pizza.
That right now.
I don't know how late they're open. Do you know the owners?
I don't.
Tell them we're talking about them.
Yeah, it's the greatest pizza. And here's the thing. I understand that Chicago and New York people are both very big and very protective of their pizza. I've had
Detroit
I posted
pizza?
About it. It's
I'm sorry.
It's Detroit pizza.
Okay.
But it,
well,
it's,
sometimes pain and struggle taste delicious.
Exactly. But I've had so many people in Chicago go, oh, it is the best pizza I've ever had. And I'm like, all right, you said it. I know you guys love yours.
I have not heard these people from Chicago saying anything about Jet's Pizza.
Considering you can check my Facebook wall right now.
Yeah, but you're not from here. You're from Detroit.
I know.
You've transplanted
but
to here.
But these
and
are
then
Chicago
left for LA.
People.
See, I don't... and I'm guessing that it is a pie cut into triangles.
No.
It's square cut?
No, it's a square cut pizza, yeah.
I don't understand what's happening.
Oh.
It's somewhat of a deep dish pizza, but square cut.
Not somewhat. It's a deep dish pizza.
It's somewhat of a deep dish. If it's not Chicago style, it alludes to being.
But technically, Chicago isn't deep dish. It is stuffed.
No, there is deep dish and stuffed. So stuffed
right, so you
is
go
a double crust. Is a crust on top as well.
Right, but that's the Chicago style. Officially.
No, also
oh, no, I've read up into it because I was like, I don't understand the difference.
Okay.
The official Chicago style is to have, like, it's not a thick crust. It's just that... It's deep, and then there's the cheese, and then the other crust, and then the sauce.
That sounds correct.
Yes.
Esmeralda, does that sound correct to you? Is that your understanding of...
Yes. It just looks like a big old casserole.
That's what I always say. It's a casserole. It's
a little bit of a stew. A little stew sensation going on there. It's funny how many people will get angry about Chicago-style pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Although I say we have really good thin crust pizza as well. I'm going to throw things at you. Craig knows I throw things at people. I don't know. I have nothing to throw at you.
Yeah, because I was like, you know what? I want some matzo with some sauce on it.
Okay, then. So Jets. I don't know that Jets is still open. If Jets
you know
call
what? Here's the thing. I ordered it like 3 hours ago, so I'm pretty sure that's still the page up on my...
There's one 7 blocks away on Wells? How is this even possible?
Yep.
Place an order. They're open till... No, it says till midnight, so it's not...
So it's not all right.
It's not open right now. Oh, it is square. That's a casserole, too.
No, it's not.
How is that not a casserole?
Because most of that is actually the crust, and it's a very fluffy crust.
You're crazy.
Like, it's a 3/4 inch thick.
3.6 reviews, by the way, out of 5. They're not doing well in my...
Wait. What is our sample size?
What's our sample size? Hold on a second. Let me see. 18 reviews. 18 reviews. 5 people have given it... okay, fine. One star says, if I could give them 0... I would. Unfortunately, that's not an option. Their stuffed pizza... Okay, let's not get into this.
I was going to say, you realize that person has written the same review on every single thing they've ever done.
Okay, so
if I could give it 0 stars.
Here's Tom's review. 3 times now, I've been drunk and hungry at 3 a.m. with seemingly no options. Then I remembered Jets. This is like
is
a
that
letter.
For or against?
I know. Jets is always there for me. Last night, I walked in
the
door.
See, it's emotionally supportive as well.
10 minutes before closing, and they still had pizza for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once they even gave me a pizza for free because they had once that one that was unclaimed and would have been thrown out. Look at that. Well, of course he's going to give them a good review.
Yeah.
They gave him not thrown
great
out pizza.
Great pizza and community outreach.
Mm-hmm. Not too fancy, not too cheap, just right. This one's open till 4 a.m.? I have to find that one. Mm-hmm. Pizza okay, not great, but better than most.
I'll still take that. That's still like a B- rating.
Oh, but here's a response from the owner. Hector, we're so sorry to hear about your experience. Because he said that the service was another story. And the owner responds. Like, when the owner responds, that's impressive.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try Jets.
You got to try it. You don't have to love it. I don't need you to call me and be like,
well,
you were correct. I just,
thank you for that.
You
thank you for the option of not having to love it.
I'm just saying.
I appreciate
I'm not gonna
it.
Be, I'm not going to be like you guys. Where it's like, you don't like our style? And then pitchforks.
There's no pitchforks.
Oh, yes, there are.
There are, well, there's, you know, there's torches, but no pitchforks.
Okay, that's
yeah, we definitely
fair,
have
fair
fiery objects. Yeah, I don't have sharp objects. I prefer fire. More for this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Nate Weatherup, who apparently likes pizza loaves from Jet's Pizza. And until proven otherwise, I'm going to call them pizza loaves. Esmeralda, you said it looks fluffy?
Yeah, it looks like fluffy pizza, and it looks like Pizza Hut.
Well, there you go.
I think
neither one of those things draw me to Jet's Pizza.
Hey, listen, I've never once tasted anything with my eyes. I don't care what it looks like. Taste it, and we'll talk.
Fair enough, but it's still pizza loaves. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. All right, mm-hmm. I will try Jet's.
Hey, the people of Sicily invented it.
Did they enjoy it.
Yes, they did.
Nate, you posted something on Facebook that I thought was really sweet about the passing of Gene Wilder, and without saying Gene Wilder, which I thought was very cool. Do you want to read it? Do you want me to read it?
Go for it.
I don't have it up. I can have it up. Nate Weatherup. I'm searching for you right now. Everyone can do that on Facebook and look at his Facebook feed yourself, and even follow him and like him.
That would be lovely.
He likes to be liked. He's got a picture of his Jets pizza box right there, and apparently a washer dryer situation from a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Here's what Nate wrote yesterday. If you've had a rough day, just think about the fact that just a few hours ago, Gilda said, "Oh, thank God you finally made it. John hasn't shut up since I got here. Peter keeps mumbling about the Ritz. And I tell you what Richard's been saying, but we can't say that word here either." And he said, "Who?" and kissed her like he'd never seen her before. That was very sweet.
Oh, thank you.
I like that very much. Because he had mentioned in an interview, this was a conversation I think a lot of people had yesterday too, when they saw a lot of the posts about Gilda Radner and Gene Wilder. And he mentioned seeing her in heaven as mm-hmm. well. And then, but there were also conversations about, my husband and I had this conversation about people imagining what happens in heaven mm-hmm. because Gene Wilder left a widow behind.
Right.
He left a woman who he was married to, had been married to and devoted to for 25 years. So it is that idea of like, so then are there different, like if you loved somebody and they died and then you fall in love with somebody else, do you then in heaven for eternity are kind of part-time with the person?
If it's paradise, I feel like it just works itself out.
It works itself out? Like no rules?
Like you get all of them and there's no jealousy. I don't know how it works.
Oh, I like that. Right. So you're polyamorous in heaven? I think that heaven would be polyamorous, Esmeralda, don't you think? There aren't any civil unions or religious rituals.
Everyone isn't into that, so for some it would be a heaven, but then other people.
But what if my heaven, that's how it is, but in like her heaven, we exist solely together. Like, why do we all assume that we're all in it together? Maybe we all get our own room.
Apartments.
Then that person is not real.
Now we're getting into, is heaven real? And that's really deep.
And then somebody was asking about, because dogs go to heaven as well, are there enough rabbits for dogs to play with? Because then you have to keep populating heaven. So does everybody.
But what about those rabbits?
I'm saying.
That's their hell.
Right, they keep getting chased forever. Do they have to turn? That's a good, Esmeralda, you've made an excellent point. At what point do the predators and those that are, that are chased.
Maybe it goes
stop
away.
Running?
Well, if I learned anything from Zootopia, it's that eventually the predators and the prey work together.
Yeah, they forget. Yeah. And they're just like, I don't remember why I didn't like you. You're really cool.
We've been talking about pizza loaves, and Tony has a comment. Hey, Tony, how are you doing?
Hello. It's actually a pretty good pizza. I personally don't think it's as good as Chicago style, but it's way up there. Yeah, try the barbecue chicken pizza.
Oh, correct, sir. Correct. Thank you, Tony. You are their barbecue chicken pizza is amazing,
and they have really good salads too.
Yeah,
they do. Now, is it an iceberg salad or is it a mixed green salad? Because I'm getting a little tired of everyone's ice. Everyone's just tossing iceberg lettuce as like a little bit of a hint, but it's got to be a little. There's got to be more hearty.
You know that doesn't count. Iceberg lettuce
does
nothing.
It's
like 87% water. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tony.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's like a chef salad, and it's made like a real chef salad type thing.
Oh, there we go.
And it depends on what you want to get. But also, you want to try like the one in Irving Park I go to, the one in Schaumburg I do not.
Hmm.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Okay.
So dabble with your Jets.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tony. Where do you live, Tony?
I'm in West Dundee.
Oh, what? So you've got a hall. Do you work in the city that you go to the one in Irving Park?
Right. Well, I've got a Village Pizza by me. That's the best pizza in the state, or probably the world, but
I respect your opinion less now. I'm sorry. I was on board with you. And then,
what, have you been to the Village in West Dundee?
Nah, I'm just joking. The Village is fine.
Disparaging other people's favorites.
You know what? You're correct. I haven't been to that location.
Just because I disparage yours, you do not have the freedom to do so with my listeners.
All right, right.
Yeah. No.
Once again, the Chicago attitude. I'm going to talk trash, but when you do, it's hurtful.
No. To the listeners of WGN Radio, you can talk trash to me. Tony, thank you so much. I got you back. I'll check out the Village. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Talk to you soon. So
you said this is a Sicilian-style pizza.
Mm-hmm. Sicilian-style deep dish.
Is there any Sicilian-style deep dish that's not Jets?
In Detroit, yes. Like, Buddy's is, like, the historic one that you go to when you go back home. And
that
it's much
one
more,
better
it's
than
like
Jets.
You have the, it has the fresh mozzarella, so it's not, like, just a layer of it. There's, like, the chunks of it, and it's, the sauce is different. I don't remember specifically how.
Because I'm curious to try it somewhere that's not Jets.
How do you hate it already?
Well, because it's like
it's all fluffy. It's going to look like Jets, but mildly different.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, yeah, you want some New York style pizza? Go to, what's that chain that's always in the malls?
Sbarro's.
Sbarro's. It's like, no, I'll go try some that's real from somewhere else.
I'm sure there is. I feel like Google will answer that better than me.
I feel like Sbarro's was cooked in like an easy bake oven.
Just like a bigger version.
Exactly. I'm always like, I can't.
The fact that it's like partially cooked and they can't just give you a slice, they're like, no, we actually have to put it back in there for a while. I'm like, well, why?
Yeah. Although Potbelly's is an interesting system with the conveyor belt through the oven. That's fascinating.
I do not like their bread.
And Jimmy John's bread is oddly addicting, and I need to stay away from it. I'm going to
My parents just buy the bread.
Yeah.
At Jimmy John's?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the day old bread. Yep.
You can also get it fresh. But it's like 50 cents.
Yeah, I was visiting and they had like three things of it. I was like, who's eating all this bread?
Have you had the breadless sandwich?
Yes. I usually go for that, but I can't because that bread's so good.
Nate just winced. And this is a guy who's lost 45 pounds.
It's not a sandwich. It's a salad wrap.
All right, then. So it's
okay.
All right. I think they actually call it that. It's like the witchless, the sandless. I don't know what it's called. Sandwichlessness.
I don't know. I will never order one.
They agree it's not a sandwich. Yeah. It's delicious.
I feel like if I'm going for a sandwich, I want a sandwich.
All right, then. What if you don't go for a sandwich?
Yeah, I just want
Then I go somewhere that's not a sandwich place.
I want some turkey and some lettuce.
Yeah, sometimes
and tomato.
Sometimes you just need that.
In a handheld.
I'll take your word for that. I've never once been like, you know what I need? Not a sandwich.
I think it's actually called not a sandwich.
Probably, yeah. Unwitch, is that what it is?
It is called unwitch. Thank you.
There you go.
I knew it was something that detracted from its sandwichness. Hey, Tim, what's your what did you want to tell us about pizza?
I heard you're talking about a Sicilian-style pizza. There's a restaurant out here, St. Chuck, mm-hmm. or St. Charles, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Called Papa Savario's. Got pretty good pizza.
All right.
Papa Savario's. And what makes it good? Is it the crust? Is it the sauce?
I think it's the sauce. I mean, it's pretty good.
That's the thing. Well, thank you so much, Tim. We will look out for Papa Savario's.
And I think, like, what he's saying, like, it's just a change of pace. Like, you always just get, like, there's New York style, there's Chicago style, and then there's crackers with toppings. It's just different. It's a nice little change of pace.
What I love about pizza is that it is a delivery system mm-hmm. for delicious tomato sauce and mm-hmm. cheese and your preferred toppings. Exactly. I will, for me, the one thing that ruins a pizza are green peppers. I can't.
It tastes like grass.
Blasphemous. Yep, both of you.
Oh, really? You like green peppers on your pizza?
I love peppers.
Well, why green peppers, though? And why wouldn't they put red peppers on a pizza?
Those are expensive.
Oh.
Hmm.
All right, then. I didn't realize that.
I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that was.
You never noticed that at the supermarket? They're more expensive.
Oh, no, I know they're more expensive, but I don't know how that precludes them from putting it on a pizza.
Well,
if they're putting up like pepperoni and sausage, that's more expensive than a green pepper.
Sure.
All right, then.
Ugh.
Okay.
I don't know if it really is.
Although I'm not one to talk, considering I will throw an anchovy on my pizza and then another one. I love anchovies.
Oh, yeah.
I love anchovy pizza.
I don't like fish at all.
Oh, well, that would be...
And here's a fun fact. When you say that to people, mm-hmm. they get really upset.
Not only that, but they'll say, have you tried this? Have you tried this?
No, and I've tried all of them.
Yes.
Because I go, yeah, all right, sure. And they all are gross.
We had a similar situation, not at the fish. And you see, you get to not like something. That's mm-hmm. what we're, like, Griffin does not like cheese, although he'll eat pizza and various things with cheese in it, but taking it by itself or in a cheese sandwich, he doesn't like cheese or yogurt or sour cream or any dips or salad dressings.
So is it more of a consistency thing?
I think it's a consistency thing. Yeah.
That's like me with tomatoes. Mm-hmm. If you dice them up and put them in a salad or whatever,
or salsa,
no problem. But
right.
if somebody gives you just a big, huge, I'm like, it's the grossest thing in the world.
I used to hate stewed tomatoes because they like slide down your throat.
Can we talk about anything else right now? Hey, Nate, what'd you do last night? I threw up on the radio.
No, I will change the topic. To your point about people being convinced that you're wrong about your distaste for something or mm-hmm. you're being adverse to something. Last night, Michael Palasek very strongly was trying to explain to our pet expert, Steve Dale, that he is very allergic to dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Dale was, you know, oh, but this, and no, you're not really. And Michael was like, no, I go into a house or a room where a dog has been, and I start getting sick. And Steve Dale's like, no, it's not possible. And you're like, how? You're not, no one is Nate. They're not in your taste buds or your mm-hmm. mouth or your brain that goes, I do not like this. Mm-hmm. Or Michael Palasek's sinuses.
Yeah.
Didn't he go to the doctor?
Who, Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they told him.
Yeah, you're allergic to
dogs. I think that's kind of definitive.
Yep.
Well, I think Steve Dale was suspicious of the rate to which Michael reacts quickly.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Like, my mom is very allergic to dogs. They got a Yorkie 10 years ago. Uh-huh. And that's a hypoallergenic dog. It doesn't have fur, so it doesn't have dander, which is what most people are allergic to. And she still had allergies with him. And I did the same thing where I was like, it's probably something else. It's probably seasonal. And then I dated a girl who was also allergic. And if I played with my dog and then kissed that girl, you would, like, her lips would swell up and you would see, like, exactly where I had touched her.
How were you playing with the dog that it was on your lips?
It's a dog. You don't kiss a dog. Hi, puppy. You kiss its face.
Esmeralda and I are both mortified.
I'm sorry. You didn't see this dog. Yeah. She was adorable.
Yeah, but you know what they do, right? With their mouths.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
You know what we do with ours, though, right?
Yeah, but we had toothbrushes.
Are you that flexible? You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And joining me is comedian Nate Weatherup and author... Ghost tour host, a tour guide, and the river tour guide as well.
Yeah, riverboats, grave robbing tours, cemetery tours, all kinds of tours.
All those things. And you have a book now available at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah,
just kill me.
Yeah, half of the Barnes & Nobles are carrying this one. It's kind of unusual for me, really. I tend to get skipped. But yeah, this one's at all your local bookstores. It's at about half of your Barnes & Nobles. This is called Just Kill Me. It is all about a ghost tour guide who makes places more haunted by killing people at them.
Well, there you go. Do we go right into your...
What a lovely setup.
It was a wonderful setup. Already written when
That's so
You'd already
that
written
faithful,
it when
it was I think okay. I think most of the draft at least was already written when
Let's
that
let's loop our listeners in as well as Esmeralda and Craig because it got very interesting.
Yeah.
I mentioned off the air to Nate Weatherup that Adam Selzer was coming in. And he does ghost tours. And Nate, I believe your response was, I wonder if he was on the bus that hit my dad.
Yeah. I believe that was my verbatim.
Verbatim.
I was like, ah.
Because I was with you the night that your father was struck by said ghost tour bus.
Yeah.
And then Adam joined us in the studio.
Let's just back up really quick so the listeners know my dad is okay. He's alive.
Yeah, we're not joking and being
he's
a little.
Fine now.
Yes, callous. Yes.
Now seven surgeries later.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was a very scary day. And you had to perform that day.
Yeah. I got a text message. My brother, sister, and I did at 6:45.
And the show was at 8:30.
Yeah, I was about to hop in the shower and then run down to the show. And we all got a text message that said, first of all, your dad is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a call. He was run over by a bus. But he called me. He's alive. He's alert. He's talking. I'm heading to the hospital now. I will send you guys updates. And I immediately said, I'm on my way. I'll be there. And she said, no. Everything's fine. Go do your show. And I got to the show, and everybody at Zany's went, what happened? And I went, oh, nothing. What are you talking about? And they went, you're pale. What happened?
Right.
So I told them, and they all said, go to the hospital. And I went, no, I have the show. I have to do it.
That's what we do.
And you got there late. I was already on stage. Mm-hmm. I remember getting off stage, and you came up to me and said, why are you here? And I said, well, because I have to, host it. And you said, Nate, I've been doing this you know, forever. I know how to close a show. I've closed a show before, go to the hospital.
Did I send you, did I make you leave?
Yeah, you made me leave.
Oh.
And thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can close a show.
Yeah.
Well, and close, by the way, closing a show means you didn't need to stay for another hour to say, please tip your wait staff
and visit us at Zanies.com. Right, exactly. But I was like, no, but it's my job.
And I can do that. Right. You had fulfilled the hardest part of the job, which is warming up the crowd. And you did it while stressed and concerned about your dad.
Yeah.
And not knowing what was going to happen to him. And also an altercation with an audience member. Yeah. I walked in when that happened.
Yeah.
That was when I was in the back of the room. You were telling a story about going to a wedding for the best man.
Yeah, it was the best man in my best friend's wedding. And he looked at his bride-to-be and said, you're my best friend. And I went, you know, I'm standing right here, and I know how she beat me, and I'm not willing to do that. And somebody decided at that moment to go, could you be more homophobic?
Could you be more homophobic?
Well, that's the thing. I've since that night got me two of my favorite jokes I have. And so I tell that. Right. And, could you be more homophobic? And I went, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but I could.
Oh, so in that moment, you're stressed. You're being heckled by somebody who clearly didn't get it.
Right.
And at the
and
same
who doesn't
time.
Doesn't know that I was a choir boy for 8 years.
Right.
Yeah. And so anyway, the whole thing happens and it turns out that, you know, my dad was crossing a street with the legal walking guy sign telling him to do it. Mm-hmm. And this bus driver took a right turn without looking and ran over his left leg, came to a stop on his right foot.
Stopped on it. Right, that's right.
Yeah, so they had to back the bus off of him, rushed him to the hospital, and my dad broke zero bones.
Wow.
Because apparently he's Wolverine. Mm-hmm. But he did have a horrible road rash. He had torn a bunch of ligaments. He had three surgeries just to repair everything, and then he had skin grafts and way grosser surgeries I'm not going into. He now has a Franken ankle. It looks awful. But he's fine. He can walk. Right. He's playing hockey and riding bikes and stuff again. But...
And then it turns out on that bus was our very one and only Adam Selzer.
Two people on the bus at the time. There was the person driving the bus who I would not even charitably call a bus driver.
Just I can't believe
a business
this is
owner
happening.
Who occasionally decided
this is amazing.
To save, who occasionally, against everybody's objections, decided to save money by driving the bus himself instead of using an actual bus driver.
But because
so I was two rows behind him, listening to him rant about other companies while deciding to drive around the block to buy a thing of water, even though we were supposed to be at the pickup place for the tour a couple minutes ago, and shouting, watch out for that guy, watch out for that guy.
And you didn't say watch out for Nate Weatherup's dad?
That I didn't do, yeah.
Yeah, next time just name drop me in that situation.
I'm going to ask, what are the chances that...
This is incredible.
Apparently they're okay.
Well, in Chicago, this is literally, what, a 1 in 8 million chance?
Yeah.
But this is the world's biggest small town.
This is insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
I run into people like this way more than I did when I lived in small towns.
Yeah, no, this is absolutely crazy. So on the bus, he runs over a pedestrian and stops on him, apparently.
Here's his thumb. He goes, what happened? I'm like, well... You ran over a guy is what happened, man.
Oh, my God.
I'd been shouting, watch out for that guy. And, you know, it was kind of those one of those, the way this guy ran, it was like an accident waiting to happen. Oh. You know.
Did you happen to be able to see if Nate's dad was, like, had a dive out of the way? How much of him did you see?
I saw him walking across the street.
And the next thing, he was gone.
Next
and
thing,
a man down.
Next thing, there was
Weather
thunk.
Up down. Oh, yeah. Thunk.
That horrible, that hideous thunk sound.
I'm not laughing, Nate.
And
oh, no, here's the deal. I make jokes when I'm dealing with stuff like that.
Yes.
That Christmas, my parents had out there like Christmas village with all like the houses and the people skating and all that. And they had one where it was like a delivery truck and there was just a guy. And so I just laid the guy down and put the truck on him. I was like, Dad, I wanted to make sure you were represented in this scenario.
Wow. And and of all things, a ghost tour bus.
That's
a ghost
the
tour
best
bus. That's the best part for sure. Yeah.
Because you were the one that was like, maybe they're just trying to drum up new business?
Yeah, they're trying
always
to create...
looking for new attractions to add to the tour.
Which
you
is
know?
What your book is about. Was,
yeah.
Your book.
Yeah, well, you know, the book is, you know, my company now that I run is Mysterious Chicago. It was actually that night that I was like, you know, I better start my own company.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's getting out of this one.
Yeah.
Really? But,
yeah. Well, you know, he'd been on the horizon for a while, but after that, I'm like, I don't know how
and he sure tried
running.
To get out of it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, well, he did.
Because I was really surprised when I was in Philly that there there wasn't a bus tour. It's all walking tours in Philadelphia for ghost tours. And then I remembered like how badly run over your father was, and I thought maybe there's a reason that other cities don't do it because there's a the liability involved.
Well, the other cities and also this city, usually make sure that you're an actual bus driver driving the bus.
Yeah, that's not something you take on as like on a whim.
Right.
You don't let me get behind this because turning radius for one thing.
Yeah, you got to know what you're doing on those things.
Well, I mean,
and most of my drivers that I work with are excellent, but they're actual bus drivers.
Right,
they've done the course.
Yeah, they've done the course. They got all the things that he would tell us. Oh yeah, I took care of all that.
Oh man, like,
I wasn't really sure he had.
Oh,
this is amazing. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. I cannot believe this.
He's running into the tour guide on the ghost tour bus.
Yeah, there wasn't a tour going on at the time.
See,
we didn't
even know. Yeah, because I never thought to ask that.
We were supposed to be on our way to where the tour was starting.
Okay.
We had to cancel the 7 o'clock tour. I remember there was a 10 o'clock tour that night that I had to run.
Your dad disrupted all those reservations.
I'd like to apologize to the good people that had paid.
Yeah. I don't think it was your dad.
For my dad walking across the street and then the bus
driver
thinking,
business.
I'll take a right through that guy.
Man versus bus. Man almost becomes ghost.
Another weird coincidence, a friend of mine that I grew up with works at a university and he works in their transportation department and he gives safety presentations. And after I had kind of posted about this on social media, he wrote me a message and said, hey, Nate, I know the statistics and person versus bus is a 98% mortality rate.
What?
It's not even like 98% you're going to be super injured. It is like there's a 2% chance you're not dead when you get hit by a bus.
So there you
and
go.
And so then he's like,
that's what I was wondering if your dad dived.
He lived is 2%. Dove. The fact that he will actually be able to walk and be a normal person again is statistically almost impossible.
So it was a good thing it was your dad and no one else
right.
in front of that bus.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really the way I wanted to put that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just one of those things that afterwards, like, my dad had to take it to court because he had astronomical bills and he missed 6 months of work and all that stuff.
Do you remember, did the company, the ghost tour bus company, try to, like, blame him for anything?
Absolutely.
That's so crazy.
Absolutely. Oh, he had his hood up.
My only involvement after that was my statement to the insurance company.
Did you did not testify or did
I didn't nope
no
called
deposition
me into court or anything like that
you
no
called
I just,
him
I just
court,
talked
that
with
he was
the insurance company. The insurance company just called me and I gave the statement over the phone as then I was standing back there two rows back shouting, watch out for that guy, watch out for that guy, and by the way, maybe check if he has a CDL.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Watch out for Nate's dad.
But,
more after this. What? Yes,
oh,
go ahead.
Sorry,
no,
I'm
no,
sorry.
I'll take your butt.
Yeah. So, but like the thing is that after the fact that like they had to go to court and my dad actually said, like, I feel guilty going to court because this was a miracle. It's a miracle that I'm walking away from this and I feel like it's greedy of me to do this. And I'm like, are you serious right now?
Your dad deserves a noogie. Just a little, just a weather up noogie. Well, that is very sweet and noble and crazy. More to this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by comedian Nate Weatherup, who just discovered that our other guest, Adam Selzer, happened to be riding on the bus that struck his father. And nearly took his life. He was the 2% of the survivors in a bus versus pedestrian situation. It's a very startling moment. We took a picture of Adam Selzer with a sign that said, I try to stop the dumbass. And that'll be available on Facebook with Nate Weatherup's Facebook page. And Adam Selzer, whose book Just Kill Me is now available at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, all of your local stores, all of your regular online shops.
Very cool.
Also, I'm talking about books. There's a book out right now called The Big Rewind by Libby Cudmore. It's a hipster murder mystery. I absolutely love that. I haven't read a book I liked so much in a long time.
What is it called?
Yeah.
It's called The Big Rewind by Libby Cudmore. It's sort of a hipster murder mystery, and it's just kind of structured like, when did I last read a book that didn't treat owning a turntable as a joke or something man children ought to outgrow?
Right.
And I love my turntable.
I have a huge collection of vinyl records that I inherited from my father that I have not gone through since 2001 when he passed away.
Oh, wow.
And even then I didn't go through them before that, so I can't remember the last time I looked through those. So we have a turntable, so I've been thinking about doing that. All right. I'm inspired to do you have
a big
turntable?
Rewind, yeah.
No, but I do have one record.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Don't Stop Believin' record.
Okay. Are you a Sox fan?
No. The
Journey.
Journey.
I know.
It was just, I don't know why.
Okay.
So people buy me things and they just go, I don't know, this made me think of you. And like, I have shirts,
like your,
all sorts
like
of shirts.
Like your Mickey Mouse shirts, right?
Yeah, like I get Hogwarts shirts and things like that, and people just go, it made me think of you. And I went, bah.
Do you like Harry Potter?
I love Harry Potter, but
have you been
like,
to the new Harry Potter?
No, I live like five blocks from there in LA, and I have yet to go, and I'm really upset about it.
You should probably go.
I just need to meet people with passes. That's kind of the big deal.
Yeah, I would imagine that it is. Are you into the Harry Potter stuff?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I have a cat named Crookshanks.
Nice.
And look, only four of the only two books featuring him were out when I first got him too. He's a 15-year-old cat.
Well, as an author, when you see like stories come up with J.K. Rowling and she's got more information for her fans,
do whatever she wants, man.
Mm-hmm. She's a billionaire.
She can do absolutely anything she feels.
She invented an entire universe. That's unbelievable.
It is,
and also her books under other names are fantastic too. Really. Mm-hmm. The Robert Galbraiths are great.
I have not read any of them. And where is the woman who wrote Twilight? Where is she now?
Speaking in middle schools,
I can't even remember. Did you read the Twilight books?
No, middle schoolers haven't read Twilight anymore.
Did you read Twilight?
I tried to read that first one. I just realized, you know what? This is not for me. This is for that 13-year-old girl.
Yeah,
has a crush on someone.
Oh well, the 13-year-old girl and me enjoyed the first one, and then it got harder to read the rest of them. And I did the same thing. I liked the first movie and did not like the rest. What are you laughing at, Adam Selzer?
Just remembering watching the Riff Tracks version of the first movie.
The
Riff Tracks. The guys from Mystery Science Theater. They record like audio commentary that go along with, that you can play along with movies.
I didn't know this existed.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Oh, this has to be part of my life.
The Twilight one is particularly good.
Yeah, I got it. That's got to be great. I saw the first one because a girl wanted to watch it, and I liked her. That's all I know about the entire series.
I've seen them all.
Well, it's interesting because vampires have always had an allure for women. Is it the same for men? That sort of
different kind. We think vampires are awesome too. It's different way, I think.
In what way though? Because there is that romantic element.
We like villains.
Oh, villains. Yeah. So as a villain, not as a romantic interest.
Yeah, as a villain, not a romantic. Well, I can only serve as the straight guys, but.
Yeah, right. No, fair enough. And because Buffy the Vampire Slayer obviously had a lot of both, where they were the villains and the romantic, which is often the case.
Well, if you're into like vampire or something, that's sort of a niche interest.
Okay. See, cause I
liked them when I was a kid, but it was because I wanted to wear the cape for Halloween.
Oh, with the red satin?
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually had a boy.
And nobody knows how they got them.
With the what? The capes? Why do they have capes?
It was a Professor Frink line on The Simpsons. Oh, the vampires with the medals, and nobody knows how they got them.
Right. Yeah, why do they have the medals?
Huh.
Yeah. Well, I always saw from cadavers. They were
like stealing them off the cadavers?
Or the, you know,
like while you're sucking
someone's blood.
While you're drinking the blood, right. What's that?
Like he earned it.
Yoink.
Like he earned like little trophies for himself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My dad, I texted my entire family about this, and my dad wrote me back, and he's like, I remember one guy, not the driver, who got off the bus to check on me.
Oh, did he check on his dad?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. There you go. Dude with glasses.
Yeah.
Ask him, dude with glasses.
Pretty
out.
Sure dad's not going to remember the glasses
the
so
glasses.
Much as
right.
the searing
Someone,
pain.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I can't get into zombies. Not in any single movie, TV version, none of it.
I did a satire of Twilight called I Kissed a Zombie and I Liked It.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
And they've tried to make, there have been several versions of like romantic zombie movies and
TV
shows.
Tried. I tried to make as realistic and as serious. You know, it was still a satire. It was still funny, but I tried to make it as realistic as I possibly could.
Right.
It was kind of the fun challenge for me. I love when I get this challenge of taking a really dumb idea and trying to take it seriously.
Yeah. I love those things. Like, those are my favorite jokes where you take something stupid and try to talk about
it
seriously.
Yeah, and try to find the heart inside of it.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, well, and I don't know. I guess because of this sort of like huge popularity of The Walking Dead, I've tried. Right, you hear everyone loves it. It's not about zombies.
I love it. After that book, I'm still zombied out. I can't do zombies anymore.
Oh, really?
After a year of doing zombie stuff and zombie promo and trying to get that book off of the ground and. You know, it was through Random House. It was a pretty big publisher and everything, but Barnes & Noble didn't like the cover, and that's all she wrote.
So. Oh.
Wow. And what's been the response to Just Kill Me?
Kirkus gave it a starred review, so that's very good.
Oh, who did?
Kirkus, one of the big book review agencies.
So I was an English teacher. I know this.
Yeah. Right. So that's a, and they're notoriously cantankerous too. Mm-hmm. It's
tricky. Yeah, it's hard to get that review. That's impressive, dude.
Yeah. But really, in a way, the humor market in YA has never recovered since Twilight. Humor has never come back.
Really?
Reviewers don't really look for humor in books.
The books were bad for children. They were bad for literature. They were bad for humor. All right.
Well, you know, I tend not to blame the books. Lots of people like books that I don't think are very good. They don't usually destroy entire markets.
This is probably my last YA book.
The next ones I work on, I'm either aging everything up or down. I don't feel at home in YA.
You think it was more YA was destroyed by Twilight than there's two other huge. Yes, not just Divergent, but the other one.
Yeah, Divergent and Hunger Games. Hunger Games I thought was fairly excellent, but Twilight just so completely took over the YA market for a while. They talked about it drawing new readers in, but those readers are gone now, and the readers that we lost never came back.
And one of the big things with young adult novels was the fact that there was morality tales to it. It was always like these great stories. Like if you look at Harry Potter, there's a lot of stuff about racism, about equality, about stuff like that. And Stephen King had one of the most biting responses to it when he was talking about...
I know exactly what this is.
He was talking about the comparison between Harry Potter and Twilight, and he said, Harry Potter, it's about morality, it's about racism, it's about, you know, fighting up against bullies.
Good and evil.
Yes, and then Twilight is about having a crush on a boy.
It's about how important it is to have a boyfriend.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yes, yes,
how
exactly.
far you go to be with who you love. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I guess it is base, and then why Esmeralda? There wasn't enough depth to it. Not enough layers.
There was a layer.
A layer. Und layer. So your book is available. Just Kill Me is available.
Just Kill Me is now out. It is. You can find it at about half of the Barnes and Nobles last time I looked online, which is fairly surprising to me. I wasn't really expecting miracles from it. I set my expectations very low these days when a book is coming out.
And perhaps your last YA book, young adult book.
I don't have any plans to do another YA book. Everything else, I wanted to do this one as an adult book. Really?
Okay. Oh,
yeah, really?
Was it more your editor that?
Oh, it's just the imprint that I sold it to in the first place is for young readers. Well, but you know, this is the girl. You know, for one thing, they go around killing people in it, and for another, you know, the girl writes erotic Disney villain fanfic on the side.
I like her.
Yeah, if you look her name up on Amazon, some of it might actually even come up. So.
Oh dear, it is weird the fan fiction and also the erotica stuff on Amazon. I had no idea. I just did not know that world.
If it exists, there's porn for it.
I know. It's fascinating to me. Anyway, although we've gone down a different route, which is fine. I think that the Disney villain erotica is fine.
I got no problem with literary porn whatsoever. Right? Whatever you feel like.
So what are your plans, though, aside from...
I've got one I'm working on that's more of an adult book, one that's more of a middle grade book. I've got a couple more nonfiction books coming out. Okay. And all kinds of plans. So,
and you have some more grave robbing tours coming up as well.
Yes. If you go on mysterioushicago.com, that'll link you to all of the tour schedule for October. I've got more grave robbing tours, cemetery walks, ghost tours, not using that particular bus driver.
No.
Obviously.
And where can people find information about all those tours?
If you go to adamchicago.com, that'll link you to everything to do with me. It'll link you to the books. It'll link you to the blog. It'll link you to the tours. It's sort of like my digital business card, adamchicago.com.
Excellent. We hang out a little bit. We have the cast of 1776 coming in the studio next from the Edge Theater. I look forward to catching up with them. Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and that is a clip from the stage production of 1776 from the Edge Theater, and we're very excited to welcome in studio. We have Orion. I apologize. You know, having a station that has Orion as you know, one of our icons and legends here. It's Orion,
like the constellation.
Is it spelled the same way?
Yeah,
Orion
it is.
And Orion. Oh, yeah. All right, so
just to trick you up.
I know it was a little bit of a Alexandra.
There you go.
Hi. Alexandra and Orion are in studio with us. Orion is the artistic director and producer, and also has a role in this production.
Yeah, a nice small part.
And nice. Well, 16 lines is what you were telling me. Lines. And Alexandra Cross plays Edward Rutledge in
That's
17.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm all tongue tied. Nate Weatherup and Adam Selzer join us in studio as well. Have you guys seen 1776 in any form? Because I recently just saw the movie with myself.
I've seen the movie.
Yes. Oh.
Oop.
Yeah.
Am I still here? All right.
Yes.
Is it based off the David McCullough book?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Okay, yeah. I've read the book.
Well, there you go. We all know each other.
Well, here. So let's tell people a little bit about, well, one, the play is about deciding to declare independence.
Yeah.
And the battle, the arguments that ensue between the colonies, between the, how many were at the time?
Well, 13.
13.
Well, I mean, New York keeps abstaining, so.
He doesn't work out.
Yeah. Courteously.
How do you, courteously. And how do you guys kind of portray that element? Because,
well, I'm really excited about it. We took a different approach. We're performing in a really fun space. We're in Mary's Attic, which is in Andersonville. Uh-huh. I don't know if you guys have been there. They redid it recently. It's just, they really made it much more inviting for full theater companies to do full theater work, not just cabarets and burlesque.
Nice.
Not to say that cabarets and burlesque are not awesome, but it's nice to have the space. They got new lighting, broader stage space, and then they put the bar in the way back, so it's not in the middle of the space anymore. So it feels like a nice little small to medium-sized venue. Mm-hmm. And what we've done to make it feel, immersive and also relevant is that we are not necessarily set in a colonial time period. Our clothing is more modern. You're in a more modern space, and the show is done all around you. So the audience actually sits with us. We call them the continental attendees. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. Oh.
And so
as though they've all been summoned
exactly.
to hear
so
this
called
argument.
Here to be part of this situation that we're in.
Oh.
It's done a little bit more like panto. It's done a little bit. The audience is. It's not. We're not necessarily throwing bones to the audience, but we do make them feel like they're part. Part of the conversation. We want them to be there to kind of hold witness to it.
Right.
So you're sitting, for me, for example, I've got an audience chair directly. I could put my hand on someone's head who sits, you know, right there next to me. So it's pretty amazing. And then what we do is we try to make sure that when we make our points about what each state wants and how they pursue their own version of independence, that we call to the people who are next to us and try to get them to see it from that state's perspective. It's really
and convince them as well,
yeah,
right?
And, you know, convince them to kind of be on our side of the argument, you know. So it's
going to be kind of rough with certain states.
Oh, it really is. Well, it really is, and that's something that you know we get into right now. That there's issues in this show that are. Not easy to talk about. They're not pleasant. It's not. We're not doing a cartoon.
Right.
You know, we're doing a show that deals with some incredibly powerful issues that are woefully still relevant now.
Sure. So. And what it means to be independent, what it means to have a centralized government.
Absolutely.
What it means to decide that we will sacrifice really an entire population of people, meaning slaves,
right.
And for the sake of declaring independence and getting the South on board with that.
We've had so many conversations. In fact, her character, Rutledge, deals directly with that, you know, discussing the fact that the commerce of this time period was utterly dependent upon the slave trade, and that there was no way to divorce the financial outcome of these people away from that trade. It did not, and it does not. The show never says, you know what's a good idea? Because no one thought it was a good idea, but it was absolutely intrinsic to the colonial time period for almost every major empire.
Right.
Spain and France were dealing with this at the same time, and eventually England would, of course, have to deal with it as well.
Well, and you know, the entire concept of colonialism, you know, what they were fighting against, what they were so angry about, was that they were forced to ship all these goods back to England on their backs,
mm-hmm.
and yet they were doing the same thing to the slaves.
The irony was lost on nobody at the time.
Yeah.
Either,
so. Well, I mean, your character directly talks about that, you know, discussing the Allie's character directly talks about the fact that Massachusetts is not without its own sin. There's a whole song just that deals with the East Coast northern states. They may not be pro-slavery, but they are directly reaping the financial benefits mm-hmm. of
sure.
the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we talk about, you know, history, I think it's something that times we, I used to do a lot of, and I still do a lot of nautical history. People want to talk about piracy and how cool pirates are. I'm like, you have to understand that pirates is the part of the slave triangle, just like everybody else was part of the slave triangle.
Right.
It's the major commerce of it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make it right, but it does make it what it was. Mm-hmm. So.
Alexandra, in preparing for this role of Edward Rutledge, did you go into like a lot of the, you know, the time period, doing a lot of research on the history?
Yeah, I tried to research the actual character of Edward Rutledge quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't quite as much about the slave trade directly involved with him that I could find. But yeah, just like, it's been really helpful to immerse myself directly into that world, because the song I have to sing isn't exactly pleasant. There are some difficult phrases that have to be said. But by really fully immersing myself, it's been a little easier.
What was Edward Rutledge's background in Massachusetts?
He was a lawyer, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I just came from Philadelphia a few weeks ago, and they have like all the plaques of what their trades were, what they did for a living. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to see. And I wonder if it was what they self-proclaimed, because, you know, I think Thomas Jefferson's was like landowner or something, mm-hmm. like farmer.
Yeah.
And some of them would say, I think that Adams said he was a politician.
Yep.
And some were lawyers, some were, you know, shopkeepers. And so it was interesting to see, and I have to assume that that was what they said they were.
And think about that back in the day when you weren't identified by your degree, where right. you said what you were. Like, yeah, that's what I am. I'm right. a Jedi. Deal with that.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I wish there was one of those on the Constitution. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jedi.
I'm a dragon trainer.
Yeah.
How are you?
Super Morris has some mad lightsaber skills.
So yeah, much less interesting than a landowner. Right.
Yeah.
One guy said he was a cake ninja. I don't even know what that is.
If
that
only Button Gwinnett had known more about lightsaber skills, maybe he wouldn't have been killed in that bar fight.
If only.
That would be amazing. Only. So tell us about the catalyst for doing 1776 this year at the Edge Theater.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. The election year was around the corner. I was I had the blessings of being married to a lovely young lady 2 years ago, and this is one of her favorite shows of all time. And I was like, you know what? I like it. I've seen it. It's not like my jam.
You'd seen the movie?
Yeah. I wasn't like a fan the way that she was. And then I watched it, and I was really it was the first time seeing it with her alongside of me, really kicked in the chest by the issues. And then Hamilton blew up, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, it's the same issues.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden the election campaign went like off the rails. And I was like, we must do this show right now.
The voice
it's
sounds like in your head.
Yeah.
It
was always the announcer voice in my head. It's like, we must do it. You know,
is that voice called Orient?
Yeah, it's Orient. Yeah. Orient. It's Orient all the announcing, which makes sense. Yeah.
There you go.
One man.
It is. I had actually never seen it. I'm not drawn to musicals because when people just burst into songs, I find that unsettling.
I don't understand how people like you can live a life with no whimsy.
Yeah.
What's the whimsy? You know I do. I love the movie 1776.
Well, that's the thing, too. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning script. There is a scene, Act 1, Scene 3, which is 40 minutes long. Without a song
singing.
In it.
Yes.
And that's the thing, too. Like, in fact, it's the only musical in Broadway history where the pit was given a walk-out break. Like, they just, like, leave.
That's amazing.
And then they just go have a coffee. Yeah. And then they come back and they start playing the pit again, because it's as if they're like, well, we don't really need music here, do we? It completely breaks the musical theory program. You know, usually you've got very set numbers, and this is where we sing the I Wish song.
Yeah,
and
I
this
love
is,
that.
You know, and all that. And then this is like, we're going to talk about really important things, and you just need to shut up and listen for a bit. We'll get to songs later on, you know.
And
so.
I do love that what is holding up Thomas Jefferson is that he needs his lady to come into town. So he's feeling a little pent up.
He hasn't seen his wife for 6 months. You know, he's like, listen, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, I need to write this thing. Yeah. We are talking to Orion and Alexandra from the Edge Theater. They're presenting the historical musical 1776 at Mary's Attic. That's running through from September 1st to the 17th. You can go to edgeoforion.com.
You got it.
So you made the website for the theater with your name in it.
Uh-huh.
All right, then. Edge of Orion. So just think, you know, in the stellar sense, where's the edge of Orion? And there's the website. So edgeoforion.com. And the opening night is Thursday, September 1st. That's this Thursday at 7:30. And here's a schedule. It's going to be Thursdays and Saturdays through Saturdays at 7 p.m. And tickets are $22. More with our guests when we come back after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, proudly born in the United States. Joining me are comedian Nate Weatherup, ghost tour guide, and author Adam Selzer. Ooh. regular on the show, also aboard the bus that struck and nearly killed Nate Weatherup's father. Also joining us is Orion, the artistic director. Orion, your last name is Cooling?
Yeah.
I say it in a questioning way to make sure I say it correctly.
You did great.
Orion Cooling is with us. He also plays Colonel Thomas McKee, and he's also the producer of the company at Edge Theater. But it's not Edge. It's E period D period.
You got it.
G period.
Yeah. Esteem Development for Greater Expectations.
That's what I thought.
Probably.
For, yeah.
Probably.
It might be what it's called.
Never, ever.
Prove it. Prove it. I want to see it in writing.
Well, that you can see it when you go watch the show. You can see it right there.
There you go.
I can prove that one.
And Alexandra T-Cross, do you prefer that the T is always addressed?
Sure.
All we right, call then. Her T-Cross at rehearsal.
T-Cross. T-Cross.
It's my shortened gangster name.
Alexandra Cross, who is playing Edward Rutledge. And where are you from originally?
Minnesota.
From Minnesota? Where, by the way, my pillows are proudly made.
Well, awesome. They're that much better.
I swear to God, that's
Have you seen the My Pillows company? Like, have you been there?
Yeah.
No.
You have to confirm.
Road trip.
I wish I could say yes.
Let's please do that.
The biggest pillow fight ever.
Now, I asked what roles you were playing, immediately I think you're going to be either Thomas Jefferson's wife or you're going to be,
Abigail
Adams, and he writes her a letter about her shortcomings and she's a little bit disappointed by that. And thanks for nothing, honey.
Thanks for nothing. By the way, I made you gunpowder. Fair trade.
And I put it in your bread.
Yep.
So, tell us a little bit about, I've been in plays before where they do gender flipping or, just gender, do you call it gender blind?
Gender fluid is the term.
Gender fluid sounds a little bit fun.
Yeah, isn't it?
Right,
yeah,
that's gender,
it's a party.
Fluid. Yeah. Have you played in gender fluid roles before when people expect
it? No, I have not.
Oh.
I had to think about that one, but no, I've never done that before.
And I love that. I mean, because that is one of the things when you watch 1776 is... But it continues to be the case, by the way. Here's a bunch of old white dudes deciding everything for Air One.
Yeah, I know a guy who boycotted when they did it at his high school back. My parents' high school back in the 70s did it. And a friend of mine who was in class with him, said he boycotted it because there were only like two women's roles in the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So for anyone who ever hears me, but we had a listener get very angry at me for saying things like old white dudes. I know. That is, I believe, a fair enough description of a portion of the population that tends to be able to have more control over the country politically and financially.
Probably.
The stats back that up pretty easily.
Yes. And I am also not. I will someday be old and I aspire to that.
Yeah.
I will never be white nor a dude.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Just things that that strike me and I go, and I hear voices scream in my head. So, yes.
Well, when we first thought about doing the show, it was essential. I said to the director, Melissa Crabtree, I was like, I'm not interested in seeing a whole bunch of dudes tell me a story about this. If I wanted to do that, I could just turn on the news. I could watch Canals Congress.
Right.
It's still woefully unbalanced,
you know.
I was really happy that she was excited about putting women into roles. And we were very fortunate to have some powerful actors come through from auditions. And we were able to land Allie for one of those pivotal roles.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
you.
It's been very interesting playing a male character, especially set in this time period, because the dialogue that's written, it was written for a man set in that time. So to have these sort of like powerful opinions... It's fun. Even plays nowadays aren't always written with, strong female leads with, like, strong opinions about really anything. So it's been a really good time being able to explore that part.
And do you, now for, as far as, because I'm, again, I'm not musically talented at all. I have none of that. And so when you're doing something that's a period piece as well as, it's something that you're trying to impart how important this is today. What is the rehearsal process like when it comes to the music and the drama of this?
Well, we started off doing mostly music. We just, tried to solidify that the first couple of rehearsals. So then we could really like delve into that world. So the music was like in the back of our mind. We knew what we were going to do with it.
You tackle it first.
Yeah. And then so we can really focus on our acting choices to bring to life those stories. Because what's most important about the songs is the feeling you bring to it and what you're going to impart on your audience. I mean, of course, music and notes and rhythm is important too, but...
Yeah, but the song should continue the narrative. The show should not stop for the song. Right. The song should be an active part of the show.
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's why I often would be sort of kind of set off when someone just erupts in a song for the sake of singing.
And the modern musical is that. I mean, their modern musical is especially conditioned to sell albums. It's meant to drive product, And that
I have whimsy, Nate.
Yeah.
Weatherup, I can have whimsy.
Probably.
Yeah. And it really depends. There are still, of course, shows like, there has not been a like release of a track from Hamilton because the show is driven story first, even though the tracks could be very right. I really thought they would the Olympics would pull one or two of those songs and like
I
throw them
so
in
too.
There.
True. Yeah, you know? I really thought so.
But you know, this show is similar to that in so many ways. Obviously subject matter.
Yes.
But it's not about writing that catchy hit song. It is about so two things happen when a show reaches a emotional zenith. It's either going to be a gigantic fight scene or it's going to be song. And in West Side Story, it's both.
Right.
But
right.
you know, that's it's supposed to be like this peak of human experience, and that's when we translate into music. That's what we can't just do with a monologue anymore. So.
And you have obviously these conflicting ideals. You have these men who, you know, in some instance, for most of the part, saying that this is what my colony wants. This is what the people I represent want. And then you do have a couple who are like, sometimes I have to decide what is actually best for them, regardless of what they want.
Yep.
That's what I think is super interesting about the representative from Georgia. He comes in very on the fence. I'm trying to sway him over to the loyalist side, but he has a line specifically that says, I don't know if being here is more about representing my ideas or representing the people. Like, what's...
Yes.
Do I know what's best or do they?
Well, and that's, I think that that continues to be the case when you go to the polling booth, right? Mm-hmm. Is, are they going to reflect what I want or do I have enough faith in this person to do what's best?
What does Adams talk about? He talks about determination. Is that mm-hmm. the big word he keys into over and over and over again? He talks about like, when you set that path and you say, listen, I know what is right. You elected me to this position and I'm going to pursue it. Even if you don't like my point of view, even if you don't like how I'm doing this, mm-hmm. I have a belief that I can follow this through. Now, of course, that's also how we get into major conflicts as well, right. You know? But there is something to be said about someone with that kind of willpower. Adam spends the entire show being disliked.
Obnoxious and disliked.
He was severely disliked.
Yeah.
And I love him for it.
And he's the protagonist of the show. And he's the guy that you're kind of following, and he's somebody who you kind of want to uppercut.
He was kind of a jerk.
Well, that's the thing, too.
And he was open about it, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, he was not interested in playing the game, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that there are a few people, I think that's pivotal to the current conversation we're having in politics. All three major heavy hitters have all been like, I'm not playing the game. I'm going to do this thing. I'm super aggressive, right? From Trump to Clinton, to even to Bernie, say, I'm breaking the system. I'm doing this now. I mean, talking about the first person to really, truly do that in our country, that's Adams, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so. And the thing about being wanting to lead is at some point, a lot of these people didn't have to keep showing up. Right. They could have not run. They could have, you know, whether it was a property or going back to their whatever other profession.
A lot of them are taking their lives in their hands.
Right.
You know?
Right. They
well,
all
that's
be
the thing
right.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah. They're all gentry. They all most everybody came from some position of power or wealth.
Right.
And they made a choice to sacrifice literally our lives, our honor.
Yeah.
For this. Like when it comes down to it. This is we can die here for this
because once they sign the document, mm-hmm. they've signed their own
death warrant for death England. Warrant. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, and then you know, I don't want to give away too much, but it did happen some time ago in history. Everybody that
win.
But the British come right, and New York falls, and then I mean, all hell breaks loose.
Well, that's
you know, it happens at the end of the show. Like we do this, and then the thunder breaks, and it's not like celebration tap dance time.
It's here we go.
Here we are.
Strap
you know, there's a line talking about we're about to sail the ocean in a sea in a ship made of paper. Mm-hmm. You know,
ooh,
like this document is really what we have harnessed our entire creativity, our entire world is just on this little declaration, which we just butchered for 4 days.
Yep.
Hopefully, there's not any more holes in it. You know, hopefully, it can keep us afloat. And the fact of the matter is, we're talking about this a lot. It was a time where real people who were sweaty and angry and confused did their best for the people that they were serving. They weren't gods. They didn't think of themselves as heroes.
Right.
They were just simply people doing what they believe was right. And they weren't interested in history to a degree. In fact, some of them were really trying to avoid history. You
clearly, because there's some of that stuff.
And a lot of them were pretty sure they were going to lose.
Right. Absolutely.
Like, most of them went, this isn't going to work, but it needs to be said. It's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just kind of went, it's not that I might die. I'm going to. Yep. But I'm still doing it anyway.
Well, the other thing that keeps also throughout the play and the story of 1776 are the letters from George Washington and the updates from the general and how the sort of impact that has from moment to moment.
I have a line that says that the man could depress a hyena.
Yeah.
You know, so it's they're very sober. They're very somber letters.
Yes.
I love those moments.
Oh, they're so good. They're so good.
Because it takes, even when you're watching the movie, and I don't know how this was done, but and I can't put my finger on it, but you feel all the air go out of your own room when you're watching it on television. You're like, not another letter from Washington.
And I think to me that's the one of the really cool things about the show. I don't know, Allie, you can maybe voice your opinion on this, but like you just see the odds over and over again. This will not work. This can't work.
Even though
this can't work. And we're sitting here in a society that was created by this working. We're like, oh no, they're all going to die. And they can't agree with each other. And that's it for us, guys, you know? So
yeah, you buy in. I can't wait to take my son and my family to go see this.
It's super solid.
We are keeping you because I know that you mentioned a couple other things that we want to talk about.
Sure.
So we have a conversation to continue with the folks from the Edge Theater, EDGE. And we'll talk about what that stands for with Orion Cooling and Alexander Cross. We also have comedian Nate Weatherup and Adam Selzer, who cosmically came together, even though Adam Selzer really tried very hard to make sure your father was not struck by a bus, and we shall all carry that to our graves.
Right, exactly.
Knowing that there was somebody on the bus looking out for your dad, person.
There's a guy. There's a guy there.
Look out for that guy. I shouted it. He was too busy talking about the competition. and his need for water.
All of that when we come back. It's time now for our news. Here with everything you need to know is Rob Martin. Oh, wait, let me say this before, because people who might be wanting, you know, maybe you're drifting off and you didn't get the information. I want to make sure that you know that 1776 opens this Thursday at 7:30. The theater Mary's Attic is at 5400 North Clark Avenue, and the shows will be on Thursdays through Saturdays at 7 p.m. Tickets are $22, and you can buy them at edgeoforion.com. More about that when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio with my guests, comedian Nate Weatherup and writer, ghost tour guide, historian Adam Selzer. Cool. And we have from the Edge Theater, Orion Cooling and Alexander Cross. We're talking about their production of 1776, also working on who we're going to call for the pretty late wake-up call. And I think we're going to go with a legislator, because it seems fitting.
It works quite well in there.
Yeah, I think that it does. It fits very well, especially with what's... I've sat in the press box for arguments on the floor of the House and the Senate in Illinois. So when I was watching 1776, I'm like, it is just like this. There's still maddening people in there.
It really is true. I think one thing Alan and I are talking about, we play characters who are diametrically opposed. I'm a patriot, as it were, to make it broad strokes. She's a loyalist, broadly. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, I think maybe something that's maybe perhaps missing nowadays is that there's a phenomenal amount of restraint in the dialogue between opposing sides in this show. There was a time period where maybe politicians didn't immediately slip to the lowest common denominator and really rip each other to shreds. They actually said, you know, listen, I may not agree with you, but I will treat you with respect.
Well, they still say with all due respect.
But then they don't do any of that.
No, it's mostly like, I'm going to show you no respect whatsoever. Right. I'm going to be as ugly as possible. Possible.
And then I'm going to say horrendous things to you about you off, you know, over here, and then you just got to deal with that. I'm not saying that we should bring back dueling, guys, but, but maybe.
Yeah. Well, did you see the governor of Maine say that he wanted to, he wished that dueling was still acceptable when he left that voicemail for a rep? Oh, let's not even get into what's going on.
The governor, when I was in Georgia, did something like that. He was a Democratic governor, but he spoke at the Republican convention and then challenged, I think it was Chris Matthews, he challenged to a duel afterwards.
See, I think, here's the deal. I think we should, if it was a duel with something kind of fun, like Nerf weapons, like they could LARP at each other for a bit.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we love to see that? Yeah, that'd be good times.
Right. That would be the definitive argument ender.
Yeah.
Right there.
There it is. Who won the LARP fight?
The LARP.
Let's bring back LARPing.
Let's roll some dice.
Yeah, exactly.
I got plus 12 protection against talk show hosts like you.
Well, and that's the thing, too. If you think about 1770, well, what was going on during colonial America and how long it took for news to get someplace.
Yeah.
And how, you know, it's sort of, that's the part that is hard to wrap your mind around, too, when you're sitting there and you have to ask everyone to turn off their phones. And by the way, I want to invite invite you guys back to do a cast wrap party.
You bet.
When you're done with this production, and we'll get food and drink and have everybody, as many people as you want to come
That'd
in, we'll
blast.
Rotate them in yeah. and talk about what happened during the run of the show.
You bet.
Because we did that with the Gift Theater, and like there are moments where, and because you are kind of wrapping in the audience mm-hmm. a little bit, you're going to have some things that, and none of the cast members actually will see sometimes that one person experiences.
Absolutely. I think that's like a, yeah, that's yeah. a great time.
Yeah. Reveal our yeah. secrets.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so then this lady said this to me right before I just sing my song. And I was like, what? Yeah.
And then this woman grabbed me and said, made me sit on her lap. We are talking about the production of 1776, which opens this Thursday at 7:30. And it's going to be at Mary's Attic, 5400 North Clark. Give people an idea what the cross street is there, because I'm bad with numbers.
That's Clark and Bryn Mawr. Clark and Berwyn.
It's, yeah.
it's actually Balmoral.
It's Balmoral, yeah.
Oh, it's all the bees.
I used to live across the street from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is. It's in Andersonville. It's a great neighborhood. You go up there and get yourself some dinner and just hang out. You know? Swing by the bookstore.
It's purple. Did you
it's
say
bright it's purple outside?
All right, yeah, go to the purple fabulous. Theater.
Yeah, I like it because there's really great drag shows in the both upstairs and downstairs.
Yep.
And when we first started doing shows here years ago, a lot of the young people I work with, because part of what we do is working with educational programming, had never ever been around a drag queen before. I'm like, guess what? This is how it is. Enjoy. Come for drag bingo.
Drag
like,
bingo
is
the most fun thing.
It
I
is
used
a blast.
To go there all the time.
It's a blast, absolutely.
Yeah. I have to go to drag bingo. Oh, why have we not gone to drag bingo? Adam Selzer, are there any hauntings in that area in Andersonville?
I'm sure there probably are.
Oh, well, it's the Costello Theater, which is what Brown Elephant is.
You never find an old theater that isn't supposed to be haunted.
Absolutely.
Okay. Part of this is because if you ask a theater person to tell you a ghost story, they'll do it.
That's so yeah. true.
Alexandra, have you had any ghost experiences?
I have, not in Chicago, though.
Not, oh, wait, what do you mean not? That implies somewhere else.
Well, I had in some, a theater I worked at in South Dakota had some spooky happenings.
What?
They're usually all around.
Oh, Ryan, you as well?
Oh, yeah. I lead ghost tours, too. So, yeah. Yeah.
In Northern Fight! Michigan. Fight.
Yeah.
Fight.
No, no, no.
Fight.
I own his book. I've been on his tour. He's marvelous. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. This is a big weird love
There's
fest.
There are a lot of connections here.
There are a lot of connections. Yes.
We're all friends.
Has anybody else run over my dad with anything?
No. No, I didn't do
no,
that.
No, but
I did want to tell you here, but
I have a time and bicycle. We can make this happen.
Yeah. Why were you doing theater in South Dakota?
I used to work there for a summer stock theater, preparatory theater.
And where in South Dakota? It's
in
a big
Brookings?
State. I don't know if I've been to Aberdeen. I don't know if I've been to Brookings.
Most people haven't.
I don't think that Mueller booked anything in Brookings.
How do they keep Summerstock running in
it's
Brookings?
It's a college town.
Okay.
And it's pretty close to the biggest town in the state, Sioux Falls. It's like an hour from there. So.
Oh, that makes sense.
I've done Sioux Falls.
Me too.
Been there.
And Sioux City. Yep. That's, you got to do the Sioux. Once you do one Sioux, you do the other Sioux.
Well, then you got to swing by Sioux St. Marie, Michigan.
Yeah, I've done that as well. Yeah, the
also done that, yeah.
Go ahead, name a small town.
With a Sioux in it, and see if I've been there or not.
Yeah, although it's spelled differently, that's the hard
that's
part.
True.
Yeah,
it's S-A-U-L-T.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So tell us a little bit about the Edge Theater.
I would love to.
Yes,
well, this is our 10th year anniversary, actually. We're doing
Happy
this our decade, guys, and so it's pretty exciting. We have three wings that we work with. We have our homeschool and unschool wing. So I'm not a person who does well in a classroom. I'm hyperactive, and I like to get out of my seat and
really?
Run around.
Ghost tour and tall ships. And also producer.
Yeah.
And
surprising. Yeah. So I don't learn in a typical way. And so homeschooling was a big part of my life. And then so we do that. We have homeschool and unschool wing, which is pretty awesome. And then we have a really important wing. It's called the Constellation Project. And this is a project. This is our 10th year for this as well. And we do gigantic theater, musical pieces primarily, with special needs population. And our programming is a little bit different than most special needs programming in the area in that we're not a buddy system per se. So what I mean by that is that most, if you go to see a show that has a special needs programming, usually you'll see a 1-to-1 ratio with a typically functioning actor on stage helping out someone who's got special needs. That's not what we do. What we do is we ask everybody to do the best work that they can personally do, and we'll support them as unobtrusively as possible. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing this again for 10 years now. When we do a show right now, we're just casting Lion King Jr. right now. So our big show for this year. We have also another program coming, Jungle Books, around the corner. So we have two different huge musical programs right now. And Lion King has 60 kids in it, of which 40 have special, no wait, 35 have special needs. The rest are typically functioning. And the goal isn't so much to build a heart or a safe place. Our goal is to build a community.
Right.
And by the time you finish watching a show, you can't see the differences between who is typically functioning and what child has special needs. You just see people doing great work together.
That's
and
awesome.
That to foster an environment where these friendships can continue outside of the rehearsal environment. So what's really cool about, we've been around long enough that the kids who were with me 10 years ago are now adults. And so what's really, Garrett Anderson is currently in my production. He auditioned just like everybody else and rocked it just like everybody else. And he happens to have played several roles for me as I directed him on stage when he was younger. And he's played Edna in Hairspray. He's done Tevye in Fiddlin' the Roof. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge roles. And now he's in the show right alongside of us and he's rocking it. He's a great actor. And I think the cool thing about what we're doing is we've been around long enough to kind of manifest our vision. We wanted to create, again, a community in which people are seen for what they can do, not for what they can't do, and where people ask them to be part of the group, not just an auxiliary, like, something they bring along and drag along as a token that they're part of it. And this is happening, and it's happening right now because the universe has given us a chance to manifest our vision.
I apologize that I spun around and was at Nate because I have a line.
If you were trying to find one more connection to Meg in this show.
Because I have my son almost didn't survive child when he was born, and I was told there were like the list of things he would never do. He might never walk. He might never talk. He might never progress past the intellectual ability of a 2-year-old. So when I would lie in the dark and try to imagine that life, I struggled very hard. So one of the things that came to me when I picked up Declan and he was crying one night, I realized I was living there. I was living in all the things that he couldn't do, and I was living in the never. And mm-hmm. It's an impossible place to live. But I only felt better when I was holding him, and it was when I realized that I had to stop worrying about all the things he couldn't do and love all the things he could do. And that's exactly what you just said.
Absolutely.
So I got the chills, and it's we're all freaking out in the studio. Yeah. But I've been saying that for years, and I try to tell people, and that's hard to impart in the work that you do. For some people, you know, will think, oh, they just make it easier. And so I don't know how did this come to you to create this environment for people?
Well, that's a good question. Part of it was by training, and part of it was by more the willingness to learn. And then a bit of desire to do something different. I was working, I coached in Essex for a decade.
Of course you did. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Cause I'm also a stuntman, which is true. I was out there and I was asked to stay at a gym longer. I was bouncing from gym to gym because I was just traveling around the nation. And they said, how do we keep you around longer? And this is over in Hanover Park at Gymkhana. And I said, build me a theater. And this, they helped adapt one of the gyms into a theater. And then I started getting restless again. They said, how do we keep you around longer? I said, I need to make a difference in the community. And so they started hooking up. Mike Buckley knew connections from Kiwanis and Knights of Columbus. And he said, I got put some feelers out there. And I met this amazing lady from Ups or Downs, United Parents Support for Down Syndrome out of Schaumburg, and she had this huge populace of young people who wanted to do something new and exciting and different. And then we just sat down in the preschool gym. We're supposed to be there for 20 minutes having a cup of coffee. 3 hours later, we're still bouncing up and down, so excited about the possibility of putting together a theater company and having these goals of inclusion rather than separation or it's not, again, it's a little bit different because there had been, and there still is, really wonderful special needs theater programming. There's nothing wrong with that, but our ideas were different. And we started jamming out about this, and all of a sudden it kind of happened. But along the way, we had to learn on the fly. We had to learn what was going to work, wasn't what was not going to work. We had to fail as many times as we succeeded. And we learned that bit by bit, the ratio changed. Well, how many teachers do I need? What qualifications do I need these teachers to have? We made a choice to not use traditionally licensed therapists at the beginning because I didn't want the... I didn't want their training of conditioning how they should be looking at their subjects to influence what we were doing. When you have trained in a certain way, sometimes you expect a certain thing from the young people. What I wanted everyone to expect was the absolute best from every young person. I wanted to find... And
right,
we still,
because a licensed therapist sees the limitations.
Right. And that is
the prognosis. Kinda,
exactly.
Kind of thing, right.
Right. And so I wanted them to see the kid first, not the prognosis. And I wanted them to demand excellence from the child. And what we do with this is that this is what I hope to do every time, is I find exactly where your limitations are, and I will hold you there, and I will demand from you your best. And you don't get to give me anything but your best. And that's a little bit different than some other programs.
Right, because we tend to think, and this happens even with the parents, with mm-hmm. with Declan will, you know, we'll think, oh, you know, we kind of lower our guard or lower our, like, you know, we just don't maintain. And, mm-hmm. and we forget that he has a personality,
yes.
that he has stubbornness. He has, you know, all these different, even though he's not verbal, you know, we act as though, you know, we learn to expect less sometimes.
Right.
And we're not raising the bar every time, which just sounds like what you're doing.
We try to. We meet these actors years. I've got some actors who have been in my program for a full 10 years now. And every year I get to see progress and growth in them, which is something that I think most teachers, I have a classroom that's been around for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You don't get that. You get to say, you know, your fourth grade teacher, you say goodbye to your kids every year. I get to say hello to my kids and every year they come back and play uh-huh. some more. And the community grows and gets more diverse and we see different people and different abilities. And we're really jazzed right now because though we primarily have been known for our work in the field of Down syndrome, we have new programs with all kinds of different people coming through. And it's just so, it's so exciting and so new for us. And some of these challenges are things we've never dealt with before. And like, well, let's sit down and figure this out. We didn't always have the answers for these things either. Let's figure out what we can do here. And so, yeah, a lot of it's about us letting people take the stage, letting them have the power, about making sure that if we use a supportive structure, that the narrative's not about the supportive structure, but the narrative is about the kid's journey, and that we're journey-based, not outcome-based. I don't care about the show at all. I care about the journey to get to the show.
All right. Oh, wow. Fantastic. And how can people find out more about getting their
kids
involved?
Oh, it's so awesome. Yeah. You can just jump on the website, edgeoforion.com. Take a look at the Constellation Project. It's one of the buttons on the main webpage. And there's a video about what we do, how we do. And if you want to see us in action, come watch Garrett Anderson. He'll blow your mind because that guy is... It's just incredible. He's a wonderful actor.
Well, for everything of the Edge Theater, go to edgeoforion.com. Let's find out who we're calling. We're going to call a legislator when we come back. Alexander, I want to talk to you more. And he talks faster than I do.
Sorry.
Which is a comfortable place for me.
It's actually been fun for me to watch because I've never seen Patty just like, oh, wow.
Yeah. What? Talk? What? Well, here for a moment before we go to a break. Alexander, what brought you to Chicago?
I moved here because of my theater degree. Since I grew up in Minnesota, I could either move to the Twin Cities, I figured, or to Chicago. And Chicago is a little more of an adventure, so mm-hmm. this is where I headed.
And how do you feel about our city?
Love it.
Oh.
Love it.
And how long have you been working with it? Is this one of your first productions?
This is my second with Edge. I worked with them last November mm-hmm. as well, so almost a year.
Yeah, and how long have you been? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we were fortunate to have her. We did a show called Holmes versus Holmes, which was a what if Sherlock Holmes helped hunt down H.H. Holmes.
And okay.
It was fascinating.
Yeah,
it was,
nice. I have a book about him coming out in about 6 months.
Awesome.
And wow. Every other book about him is completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no murder castle.
Oh, fascinating. I can't wait to hear more about that.
Media made it up.
Nice.
Well, the police made it up and the media ran with it.
Fantastic.
And how long have you been in Chicago?
2 years.
2 years. And now, what part of the city are you living in?
Lincoln Square.
Oh, see? It's the best part of the city.
I love it.
Sorry, everybody. I love my neighborhood, too, but... Yes. What?
I used to live there. How many connections?
All the
time. Can we just meet up for coffee like once a month?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
The important question is, have you had Jet's Pizza?
No.
All right, then. So
well,
there you go.
We know what we're doing tomorrow.
Yeah,
plans made.
Let's see who we're calling when we come back. I'm Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Wake me up before you go, go. I don't want to miss it when you hit that. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining your comedian Nate Weatherup, who's performing at the Comedy Cafe in Milwaukee starting Thursday through Saturday. And Nate, do you have a website you want to send people to?
I do. It's just nateweatherup.com. Weather like outside, up like the direction.
And we'll get to the rest of our promos here as soon as we get, let me put this on the line. We are calling Senator... Oh, let's see if we get the voicemail if we get him to answer. We're calling a state of Illinois senator. I wonder if he's gotten his paycheck from Comptroller Munger recently.
Your call has been forwarded.
Oh. See, I'm going to need anyone who has an automated voicemail, could you please put your voice? It's just more, I don't know, it's personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plus, when we call you in the middle of the night, it's just more fun.
My dad leaves seasonal ones and then forgets it's the season. And then like, you'll call him in June and like, well, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hello, Senator Connolly. Oh, hi, Senator Connolly. It's Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio.
Craig Collins.
Esmeralda Leon.
And around the horn.
Nate Weatherup.
Adam Salter.
Alexander Cross.
Orion Cooling.
And we just wanted to call and say hello. It's been a while since we've had you in studio. I believe last time he was here, he actually had we had a lot of food from the Lincoln Square area. There was some really tasty treats. We've been talking about, well, let's go ahead and go back to the beginning of the show. I was talking to John Tatey about many things, including the series Stranger Things. Did you guys watch Stranger
just
Things?
Tonight, actually, the last episode.
You just finished it?
Yeah.
What did you think?
I was like this, wow.
Because for me, it was there was a lot of sentimental value to it because I grew up in that time period. Have you watched Stranger
Things? Not yet. I'm terrible with pop culture.
It's all right. You know, it's also a great story, I think.
It's marvelous.
Do you watch Halt and Catch Fire?
No.
Because I couldn't get into it. And I was wondering, do you watch Halt and Catch Fire, Nate?
No, I forgot we were leaving a voicemail at this point.
Yeah, for the whole thing, as much space as we can take. What are you watching on Netflix? Or anything? Are you binge-watching anything?
I'm not currently binge-watching anything.
What was the most?
I did Stranger Things.
Okay.
I wasn't in the right headspace for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The whole thing?
What headspace were you in?
Not liking it?
No, it was fine. It was... It was. It's been a busy month, and so it was just kind of like background noise. And
do you not like Goonies?
I do.
Why
like Goonies.
Why is everyone saying Goonies? I've never seen.
That's
Goonies.
The thing is, I don't see the comparison.
Do you like,
to Goonies.
Do you not like E.T.?
Yeah, I don't see the Goonies comparison at all.
I think E.T. more so.
E.T. is. We should really be talking about E.T. like a capital F film. People don't tend to think of it like that, but it is.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's one of the great films.
What about you, Adam? Are you watching anything?
I got through Stranger Things. I just watched the last episode of Roadies.
All right.
I had a good time with Roadies.
Roadies was good?
Roadies, yeah.
Interesting. With Luke Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a good time with Roadies.
Alexandra, are you watching anything?
I'm still on season 3 of Mad Men, so I'm a little bit behind. Nice. I watch New Girl sometimes.
To listen to your message.
Oh, we've run out of space. I feel like we should call him back and leave the rest of the... No, you know what? Do you have Senator Cullerton's number? Let's go ahead and just leave a message for another senator. We've got a few minutes.
Might as well.
Yeah, why not? Just leave the second part of our message. Do you have his number? I can't read it
to
you.
Hey, we got cut off. We didn't even tell you about the rest of the things we were talking about.
See, I've been watching a lot of like Law & Order SVU, but it doesn't really count as binging if it's just on TV. Like,
Turn to a random channel.
Yeah, exactly. It's just
like
what TBS is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what my last Stranger Things was probably my last marathon. The rest of the message I was going to leave for Senator Connolly was that the production of 1776 is opening this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at Mary's Attic, which is 5400 North Clark Avenue, and you can go to edgeoforion.com. I'll have to invite the senator myself. I think that's what we should do is like a legislator's field trip.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Ooh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Listen, since you're not getting paid anyways, what if y'all want to come up towards us and see a show?
Well, it's an interesting dilemma I think it looks good in the press to say, hey, we're not going to we're going to put them in the back of the line. We haven't been paying all these other agencies, and why should you get paid? The problem with that is they have done their job. They passed a budget and the governor didn't agree with it. So basically, you didn't vote the way we wanted you to. So is that really the way democracy should work?
This goes right back to exactly what we're talking about. You know, at what point do you stick up for yourself and stick to your guns, even though it might be the unpopular choice?
Right. And not just unpopular, but also at your own risk of not being able to support your family.
Right.
Because we think of the legislators as all making a lot of money. It is about $60,000 a year. And some of the legislators do have other jobs. There are others that do not. So that in order to pay for their own livelihood, their family's food, one of them has actually become an Uber driver.
I saw that.
To do that, Jaime Andrade, who we actually have to, he doesn't want to talk about it. Other people are talking about it for him, but he needed to find something that was flexible, that, you know, he has to take all this time off, you know, when he does have to go down to Springfield.
Right.
So it's just one of those things. But 1776 opens on September 1st, and tickets are $22. What else do I want to make sure before we run out of time? What do you want people to know about this?
We got more shows coming up, too. Like, this is one of the productions. We just cast 5 shows this weekend, 5 different productions. We have our youth theater shows, but coming up around the corner, we have Klingon Christmas Carol. We're bringing that back. I was on hiatus, and now we're back with it. And we're excited about that. We've been selected to run that here in Chicago, so we're doing that. And then we also have Steampunk Christmas Carols. We're doing 2 Christmas Carols, both at Boho.
Steampunk
Christmas
Carols.
It's real
good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just want the costumes.
I gotta tell you, they're off the hook. Like, we have a phenomenal costume designer, and it looks
really
nice.
Give me a corset and some latex, and we're having some fun.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's a Friday night for me.
It's actually on Patty's business card.
Isn't Christmas Carol already basically steampunk?
Yeah, pretty much.
Just regular steam, I guess.
Yeah, the idea is basically that.
I want to thank all of our guests for joining us in the studio. Again, catch Adam Selzer's tours, and you can go to
AdamChicago.com.
AdamChicago.com. Go to NateWeatherup.com. Go to edgeoforion.com for more information about the theater.